I want to call to order the June 8th, 2015 board meeting. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mrs. Moak, a roll call, please.
Mr. Buckle?
Here.
Mrs. Clark?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Alger?
Here.
Mr. Bochinski?
Here.
Mrs. Milk?
Here. Thank you. Oh, well, the Hawks are playing, so...
Really?
We'll be... We have Mr. Hawk at the table tonight.
That's tonight, huh?
Yeah, it is. Welcome. For public participation, I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form that are found in the entrance of the our boardroom, and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less if you can. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we ask that in the interest of time you please forego making them, but also provide the board any copies of written material that you might have. That would be helpful for us. Personal complaints, criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, any interruptions, and or interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate D41 staff representative for a response, as a response is warranted. In response to requests for referrals in the past meetings to appropriate administrators regarding a community member's public comment, Dr. Gordon tonight will refer the administrator or will himself make note for follow-up as needed, depending on what the public comment is. So we'll keep that focused tonight. And also a reminder for board members, if we can refrain from personally remarking on community member comments during public participation. We have a role in this as well. So thank you for that. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board?
Karen Banter.
Eric, just we're streaming live, right? Again?
Yes.
Yes, we are. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Kenneth Banter. I have 3 children that I grew up with. And I want to say first that I'm very proud to be a District 41 parent. It's exciting to see that there are some innovative and new things happening within the district, and I'm very proud to be a part of that. I appreciate all the work that's been done by the board, the administration, and my fabulous teachers to make these changes happen. As my kids say, though, here's the but. They say, oh, Mom, don't say the but. But we are concerned. And when I say we, I've been talking with some families. And we do have some concerns about the number of changes and the pace at which these changes have been implemented. It seems like a lot when you think back over multi-age, new common core standards, PBLs, teacher specialization, looping at fourth and fifth grade layup levels, proposed looping at second and third grade levels. It's an awful lot over 2 years, and we're just concerned about the number of changes and the pace that we're being implemented. Given that, we are looking for some reassurance that these changes have been positive for our students and our teachers in our schools, and we're asking the board to consider the following. One, a detailed evaluation plan that will give us the answer to have these changes benefited our children. We are by no means saying that they haven't. We just haven't seen quantitative data that says that they have, and we're interested in seeing that. I think it was in the district's final think tank presentation, they said that they would be evaluating the implementation on an annual basis, but we would like to see what the specific plans are for that. What are we going to look at? Are we going to look at test scores? Are we just looking at data from teachers and from parents? We'd like to know a little bit more specifically what the evaluation plan is. Number two, we are looking for a commitment to an annual, independent, and confidential survey of our teachers and an action plan following that feedback. We understand the survey was done last year, and when we review that feedback, it will be mixed. There seems to be some really positive traction around specialization. It seems a little bit more mixed around the multi-age. But more importantly, why haven't we surveyed the teachers again this year? I think we're planning to do it again in the fall. But we see that as a missed opportunity to collect important feedback during this time of massive changes.
1 minute.
So we would really encourage the board and the administration to consider doing an independent confidential survey. We feel that while roundtable discussions are helpful, unless they're done by independent sources, it's very difficult to make sure you're getting honest, unfiltered feedback from the teachers. So again, the importance of confidentiality and a forum in which they can express issues and concerns is critical. We also really encourage an action plan that is responsive to that feedback, whatever it is. You know, we may learn that they feel like we are on the right track, and that's great. That reassurance will help parents if we hear that. But if we hear otherwise, what is the action plan to address those concerns? I had the chance to kind of look through some of these comments that were done the last time, 66 pages of teacher comments. Mm-hmm. There's some fabulous things here. There are concerns here. And I don't know if there is any plan to address some of these concerns. There are some themes that stand out that are ones that I feel that need to be addressed, and we haven't seen a plan that will address the concerns that the teachers are trying to articulate in this survey. So we're looking for an action plan to address those.
15 seconds.
Last, we are asking a pause on change until we can settle in and address these concerns. We feel that there has been a ton of exciting things done to address how we are teaching, but we really want to give our teachers a chance to focus on what they are teaching, what vehicles they're using to reach the common core for our students. We'd like to have a chance for things to settle so that they can do this. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And just, what is the process? I mean, I spoke tonight. I can tell you that I have probably 10 or 15 families that feel this way. Do you need data that says there are more than that? Should I reach out? I mean, how do we proceed? Will you reach back to me?
I'll reach back out to you. Okay. So that's what I was getting ready to jump in.
Okay.
I'll reach out to you tomorrow. Also, we'll be having an academic update at the next board meeting, June 22nd, where we will talk through those data points. We've done them. This will be our fourth time with academic data updates.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeff Cooper.
Regarding the community engagement recommendation tonight, if Dr. Gordon really, really wanted his game changer to become reality, all he has to do is start a pilot program at the K-5 that is the easiest remodel. You could probably start this in 2016-17. You can have a lottery open to all District 41 parents so that everyone will have a chance. That is, if he really, really wants to get FDK going ASAP. Because if that was really, really the case, we wouldn't be trying to approve tonight some committee on steroids. To the board members that may be thinking of running again in 2017, realize that voting to waste $50,000 will become an albatross in that election. So, jump on the pilot train. You'll get FDK, and you'll save $50,000 towards a remodel. Seems like a no-brainer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bruce Curry.
I have two comments. One was about in the board packet, there's how many citizen leaders, or there's the citizen leaders. And so it looked like, you know, you're going to have two board members, superintendent or one of his representatives, communication director, person from GIA, person from NASA. And then it's not spelled out how many citizen leaders there were going to be in, I think it was the facility charge team, which I think is the overall thing. And then there's also the citizen community chairs. What do they do? I don't know. And maybe you guys can explain that a little bit more in discussion through Unicom Park. And then it said, should this process lead to a recommendation, Unicom will publicize this program to the media and the community. And my viewpoint on that is if it, you know, if we want a referendum and we want to go forward with either adding on the three options of adding on the facilities, building a new school, two types of new school, that'll sell itself. I mean, the community will vote on that. It doesn't need publicizing. It doesn't need a sell. It needs to be known what the, you know, what the costs are going to be, what the school or the options are going to look like. And $50,000 does seem like a lot of money to spend on this. I felt like the community sessions, I mean, I guess, would I be a community leader? I don't know. I'm just a guy in a Hawks t-shirt. But
it's a good shirt.
I've come to enough meetings where I think that, you know, I would be looked at as a community leader for this district and would put myself up there to be on that team. And then it says the community sessions are not designed as an open debate, but a working session. I think sometimes we do need an open debate in District 41, more so and more so. I feel like otherwise the results, you know, the committee will filter the results. And I think that's not open and transparent. I really think the results should be laid out there. I mean, when we got results from, you know, a confidential or private teacher thing, it says...
30 seconds.
Confidence in the leadership of our school is, I'm sorry, it seems to me that our district jumps full steam in things without fully understanding the process. It is taking a toll on your teachers and staff. If we do one or two things a year, that would help everyone out. One other comment. There's a strong feeling of distrust and that Big Brother is watching. There's very little support from administrators in times of adversity.
Can you
there
finish up, Mr. Curry?
That the schedule is more important than the learning.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
There will be further discussion, as you mentioned, during that portion of the
sure.
board meeting.
That's it? Okay. Right. Thank you very much. All right, presentations, reports, updates. Our first one is the Teams for Excellence report, and Brian Bonkowski, who is one of our Glen Allen Education Association co-presidents and co-chair with Paul, Dr. Gordon of the CIT, will present the report.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks for the introduction. Tonight we're going to go over the Teams for Excellence report. Each one of these teams are an important component of our district. Starting with the Continuous Improvement Team, Team 21, Professional Development Team, and our Building Leadership Team. Each one, as I said, is critical to the overall direction of the district. So with that, I'll have Brian kind of talk to you just briefly about the school leadership team.
All right, each of the five buildings has a BLT, a Building Leadership Team, I'm not going to read the... slides you, but the overall things that they focus on, you can see your planning instruction, analysis of data, and a lot of time is spent working on the school's Rising Star plans that are required as a result of not having reached A1P, which of course no school can anymore.
I think one of the important things with building leadership teams is they're continuously meeting. Some meet for an extended period of time, once a month. Others are split it up to twice a month, just depending on how it meets the needs of each of the buildings, and really trying to ensure that they're having these ongoing conversations about students, staff, learning. How do we continue to move down that path of improving student and staff learning for those next steps, right?
Alrighty, next step. There's a strong focus on instructional leadership in all five of the buildings and their BLTs. Some of the strategies there are mentioned that they're planning to work on next year. Rising Star process is a key way they focus on the larger school improvement process. There are in Rising Star, it takes quite a bit of their time sometimes in their BLT meetings because there are so many different indicators that they have to assess and monitor. Probably the big room for improvement or growth next year for BLTs is something we identified through working with them in CIT this year, which was to really strengthen the partnership with the Continuous Improvement Team and the creation of more robust feedback loops so that the BLT can provide BLT is going to provide the continuous improvement team with the information about how things are going in the five buildings, and then in return, the continuous improvement team can give support and direction both. And to that end, we tend to invite all the principals of the five buildings to attend the CIT meetings this year.
The next is Team 21. Their primary focus is innovation and leadership by researching, developing, and making recommendations regarding the best and innovative instructional practices. As you can see, they've had an incredibly busy year. You've heard Erica talk about disrupting class a number of times, really talking about the TLC piece, where we're going in, really viewing those classrooms, really having those model classrooms, but having teachers being able to have conversations, see what's going on, but working together, teachers with teachers, having those conversations. The library and media specialist, really looking into how do we continue to ensure that that is the hub of learning within each of our schools as we continue to transition with more digital literacy. What does that mean for our library and media specialists? So continue to have those conversations. And then they always looking at our MAP data throughout the year. Again, supporting the TLC piece, assume responsibilities for the compact within a grant, the parent involvement at each school that parent liaison. So really owning that portion of the grant. And then conduct site visits to District 59 to observe their technology, including Chromebooks, tablets, and other pieces along the line.
Paul, can you remind us 59 is in?
You have to remind me.
Elk Grove Village, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, on to the professional development team. And the PDT is terrific group. They do a lot of important work for our district, mainly planning our all district professional development days. They get feedback from participants and from the different building leadership teams about what has gone well, what is needed in the future, and they also then differentiate among the different types of staff and employee members that we have. And so that's a big job. So there's different professional development for our licensed teachers, for our support staff, and then sometimes there's professional development that's for all groups. And you can see some of the examples that are given here. And again, the feedback process that they get from all employees is an important part of their work then to improve and move forward next year. So you can see some of the things we're looking at next year is inquiry-based learning and unit planning designs, and the workshop models, some of the things we've really been focusing on this year, continue to provide training support in those areas. And again, the differentiation of professional development based on need and job type. And at Hadley, the technology piece of continuing professional development along the one-to-one technology initiative there has been a big part.
With CIT or the Continuous Improvement Team, they're really the umbrella that connects all of the teams for excellence. So we have members, the co-chairs from each of those different TFEs sitting in on CIT. Couldn't think of another acronym to throw in there really quickly. So it's important to, as Brian talked about, that feedback loop. How are we, what's occurring at the building leadership teams? What's occurring at Team 21, what's occurring at PDT, so we have that continuous feedback loop and trying to strengthen it, and that's one of our bigger goals with the BLT, ensuring that we have that direct connection with the buildings to the continuous improvement team, and we're making that modification for next year and having the principals join us for those CIT meetings, again, making those nice connections. We're really looking at that student data by subgroups, where are we at, how are we doing within each of those areas, finding that support for the D41 model around our PLCs and our differentiation. PLCs, incredibly important next year with the more time for planning for our elementary teachers. just as important for our Hadley teachers to continue to enforce the PLC practices that are already occurring there. The PLC, I apologize, the professional learning communities that each of our schools use. Again, this year, we did some things a little bit differently. CIT went out to the building leadership teams, sat in and listened to their conversations. I was fortunate to be able to participate at Hadley, and really hearing about these great instructional conversations about how are we defining those practices that we want to see in every classroom, having great dialogue and at times debate about what is that and what bar should we hold across the building. Fantastic conversation. So all the CIT members went to different building leadership team meetings. And again, continuing to connect. That's what CIT's biggest charge is connecting all the teams for excellence. Summer work, continuing to build the action plans about how do we continue to improve our PLCs, the differentiation, the intentional feedback loops, and continue to visit our school. They talk a lot about this. One of the big pieces that a continuous improvement team will be taking on next year is that renewal of the long-range plan next year. The long-range plan, lack of a better term, expires. So we've got to renew that piece. So CIT will be taking on that charge next year. Here are all your co-chairs for the different teams. Morgan.
So I see the co-chairs. What I'm wondering is if you could go through, because we're streaming it, because there's a lot of people here, and talk about the makeups of these teams and how you get on a team. So we're talking about BLTs, we're talking about CITs and PDCs, because it's a lot of education speak.
Yeah.
So, you know, are these teachers, principals, parents?
Oh, I got you.
You know, that, so that people understand who's on the team.
Yeah.
And also, if you're someone who wants to be on the team, how you get on the team.
Okay. I'm going to hand it to Lori first to talk about...
Sure. You know, contractually, there is a rubric of membership for each of these teams.
Mm-hmm.
For each of them, they're co-chaired by someone for administration and by a GIA member, with the exception of PDT, which also has...
And a GIA member is generally a teacher.
It's somebody, yeah, in the teaching category.
Yeah. In the teaching category.
It could be a psychologist, social worker, or a school nurse, but somebody who contractually...
A non-administrator.
Right. PDT also has one APSME representative as a tri-chair. Then the rest of the group is it just depends on which team it is. It often is the case if it's a district-wide team, like the professional development team or continuous improvement team, there'll be one or two representatives per building from GIA.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are a GIA member, you have to be elected by your felt numbers or building to be on
the team.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the building leadership teams, it's usually broken down within each building by category. Like at Hadley, ours are elected by departments. At the elementary schools, they're elected by level 3, level 2, level 1, and then other. There's always a catch-all, like others, like three others can be added to. So it could be a social worker, a music teacher, a
okay.
PE teacher, things like that. And then there are, additionally, there are, on some teams, there are parent representatives. And there's a PTA president usually serves on CIT. Usually the board president serves on the continuous improvement team. Is there a board? There's a board member? No, I'm Team 21. I'm Team 21, the board member. So there are various others that...
And then there's also the opportunity for other resource people to join the team if needed. So, mm-hmm. for example, today, we actually PDT met tonight from 4 to 6, and one of the things we talked about was who else do we need on our team for this upcoming year, knowing what we're working on.
Right. So
we have that flexibility to add a representative that isn't spelled out if we feel that that person is needed.
So the teams with parents on them, how do parents get involved?
So, like CIT, it's the PTA president.
So it's not just generally a parent. It's a PTA.
In CIT.
Okay.
Team 21. We have two parent representatives, within the contract, they come through me. Like last year, we had conversations with a couple of parents. Parent recommended somebody else. Met with that individual. Ended up selecting that person to sit on the team.
Okay.
So we're trying to put those pieces together and ensure that we have parent representative teachers. On CIT, we have AFSCME as well. We have AFSCME representation there as well. But a nice broad cross-section of our district.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Brian? I have a couple questions, and I think we need to understand and appreciate the weight of this presentation. Because this truly defines the procedure and how the board gets the feedback on the programs that are in D41. From the administration side, we're very in touch with Dr. Gordon and Lori and all the other things. But Brian, I want to get your feedback, and I think I'm not trying to make this to be an aha moment or a catch moment. I truly want your honest feedback here. BLT and CIT and PDT are all feedback loops that should help support the conversation with the administration as a board member if things are going well, if things are not going well. You did talk about, the feedback loop between CIT and BLT. We talked about AFSCME and GEA representation. The model that's in place, do you feel, everything can always be improved, right? Getting our principals and more engaged or whatever you guys are trying to do with that. Is the model in place a sufficient model to allow me as a board member to get the feedback I need on the programs that are happening at D41?
The model being the BLT to
all
the
everything we just talked about.
Yeah.
And no offense, Paul, but
no, I just wanted to understand the question.
Yes, because in all the teams, there's equal partnership between GEA and administration, and that's one of the key components of this whole Teams for Excellence system, is that it is a way for the teachers to collaborate and share jointly in the decisions that are made. And so when the discussions are being held at the building level, at the BLTs, or if they're being held in a PDT meeting or the CIT meeting, all voices are in the room, all information is out there, and that's kind of the way the whole plan was designed.
Yeah. And nothing's ever going to be 100%, and you're never going to get unanimous approval by everything and everybody from the administration or board to the asking and GEA. But do you think those forms are open enough and truthful enough that the leadership of those forms have a avenue to convey those issues to be addressed and escalated and then discussed at one of these forums?
The teams?
Yes.
Yeah. I do. From my experience in them, there's not been holding back by anyone from what I've seen. That there seems to be very open and honest and full discussions of everything that comes forth. Mm-hmm. That's been my experience. I've been on a heavy BLT years ago, and the CIT was good. Yeah, I think
there
has
been. Can I ask something towards that? So if I'm a member of GEA and I'm not on one of these teams and I have something that I want to bring up, is there a way for me to bring that up through these representatives, or do I bring it up
right,
myself?
So I would go to my social studies representative on our Hadley Building Leadership team, and that's a every time we got a department meeting, that's on the agenda is, you know,
what you're going to bring,
you know,
to
what is Ryan bringing back to us from BLT, and what do we then want to take to BLT for? So I assume that's similar across the district.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct.
I just, it's more of a comment, but I would say there's probably the interesting thing will be, into to Karen's point, the survey is what's going to find out whether what we're hearing now is connected to what the teachers are actually feeling, because it's anonymous. So it's my feeling that there is distrust within the system, and I think in the end, that's why the survey is so important.
Well, I think it can be a tool set, but that's why I wanted to ask Brian, you know, is the structure in place that allows that open, honest communication at his representation level to be brought at these levels?
That's fine for him to answer that. I would kind of disagree with them from what I hear.
You disagree with Brian's assessment?
Yes, I do. And I think that it's, my point is, I think it's going to be borne out within the survey. So if we truly want to find out what our staff is thinking, that's what we're going to find out. So, you know, next year, you guys can tell me I'm wrong if I'm wrong, but we'll see what happens. So, but I know that.
I mean, that's a pretty big statement, though, right?
Sure.
I mean, you're telling the representative that his membership doesn't have the ability to openly communicate with him.
Yeah.
I guess I jotted a note. I was going to say something similar. I know we're talking about the culture and climate survey later too, but I think, you know, the teams are in place, the structure's in place, and I don't think there's necessarily a question about the structure to gather feedback, but I think the issue, to echo what Kurt said, it's more the culture that I feel that exists in District 41. I've heard from numerous teachers in all different schools, all different departments that say, you know, they do have some concerns and some feedback they would like to give about many different things in our districts, but they won't do it because if they do, it'll go into their evaluation, they'll get marked down negatively, and then that could come back to bite them later. And so I've heard that a lot lately, and so I think that's why I'm not in the survey.
That brings up a whole...
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable using hearsay, especially as board members voicing that. But what I'm saying is, I think what we're...
If a teacher has told me...
I say that you can be uncomfortable. We're comfortable in saying it. We are an open board, correct?
Yes, Kurt, I am. What I'm saying is that I think what I'm hearing Brian say, and I want to put on the table, is that, you know, the very effect of this structure was looked at in a very discreet way at it was two contracts ago, because in fact what you're bringing up was part of the conversation, which was, are these teams structured? And that was the bulk of the contract conversation. I served on that contract team. But the majority of that contract discussion was around, how are these teams structured, and do they provide enough participation, you know, so that people can come to the table? And I think I simply want to share that, because there was a real desire on the part of the district, and I don't want that to get lost, to say there are different avenues for giving feedback. Certainly Teams for Excellence are one of those, and the other level of that are the surveys. And you know that we're going to have, as part of the engagement plan, a whole series of survey discussions, and that'll also frame some of the answer to the earlier comments. But I want to tell you that, in fact, this very discussion happened in a very, very discreet and long, over many, many hours of contract discussions around, let's make sure we have opportunity for people to come to the table. And that there are other ways to get that, too, and the survey will get at that.
And I just felt it was important to clarify, because I'm a little concerned that there's an insinuation that if there were issues that we would hear from these committees. And no one said that. I just felt like that was maybe insinuated, and I guess I feel like there are concerns that we're not hearing about for the reason that I said. So
that's exactly what I was saying.
So we have to make sure that in the structure next year, with principals being more engaged, and also, you know, and I'll say it, many of us work in organizations, and we feel some of the same frustrations sometimes. I mean, that's true. Silent organizations are not healthy. And so my expectation when I sit on Team 21 is I heard teachers discuss back and forth frustrations or concerns, et cetera. They got put on the table. And that, you know, would loop back up to say, so then what's that next step? So, you know, sometimes those in-time conversations certainly can't be replicated, and I think that that is a part of the frustration because you want to know what exactly is being said. So part of the toolkit, and I know I brought this up earlier and I'm working on a template, is even us as board members to have a consistent template for reporting back so that we can decide on what's the board information to come back to the board from Team 21, from Policy Committee, from Finance, et cetera, so we're getting some of the detail, and we can agree on what that detail should be as well.
Well, I don't want to lose the weight of this presentation because it adds to... For me, these are the forms that tell me, that inform me from a subset or population or group of administration, teachers, and parents in some cases, the programs that are happening at D41.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Again, I appreciate that there's always you're not going to get 100% of everything of anything. But if this is the program that I'm relying on, that I get that feedback, then I'm going to rely on this program and the representative that is telling me that this program works.
Mm-hmm. Any comments?
I just had a question, right? You know, how often, let's say in a month, do you get commentary from the teachers?
How often do you hold
issues or things that come up? How often in a month?
Outside of these forms?
Well, within these forms.
I'm sorry. Say that again. I'm sorry.
I said how often would someone to you come to you with an issue to be discussed in this format?
How to be discussed it. Well, I'm only on the continuous improvement team.
Okay,
that's a large umbrella. It's relatively infrequent that an individual member comes to me directly about something related to CIT. It's several times a year, maybe. But for somebody who's at a closer to the ground level, like on a building leadership team, it would be relatively frequently.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
All right.
Jill, do you have anything?
Oh, can I ask a question?
Oh.
I mean, one thing I noted about Team 21, I know that was the team that was given the task of following through with the 21st century initiative of multi-age specialization and to follow through with the evaluation for fidelity, impact, and satisfaction. And I noticed on their task list, there's nothing in there about survey feedback and addressing that to kind of go back to what
Mrs.
Sanford said earlier, so I don't know, was that not something that Team
21
focused on?
That's not their charge. That comes through the academic updates. The 18-month survey, those pieces, my conversations with teachers around that, their satisfaction with it, the fidelity of implementation really goes to the having conversations, are we multi-aging? Do we have teacher specialization in place? What does that look like? So from the Team 21 standpoint, no, it's not on their plate.
Team 21 did nothing with the survey.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah, that was...
Okay.
No.
Okay. One thing I want to make as an observation is I had asked about this. We had CIT last week, and that's just a quick board report I'll do later. But on the agenda was to lay out the schedule for next year. But there were a couple conversations that I think are germane. One is I asked the question, do we get parents to serve on the building leadership teams? Because that's a really, I think, critical role that parents have. It can be challenging because those meetings are held, from 4 to 6, right? But even if there's a rotation, I know that a couple schools struggled, but now I understand next year they're filled. And I think there's one school still looking. But I would encourage that just, to community members, to if you can even rotate that position, because that's part of that feedback back to the community. The other piece is, the question about professional development. I mean, in the last probably 5 or 6 years, the professional development team has really, in an ongoing way, reviewed itself to say, are we doing the work that we need to do for professional development? And one of the key ways is that immediate feedback that you get from teachers after professional development, whether it's Regional Office of Education Institute days or on site. The discussion around school improvement planning days, the SIP days, and that you could self-create, and that was a way for faculty members to say, we really need this in this area. So I know your presentation was meant to be kind of, here are the big, you know, pieces, but I think that that's really important because the professional development did inform the kind of planning and group planning that Paul then took over and had here in the boardroom, and it came as a result of saying, we need more time together. And I remember that being a board report. And then the last one is, and I just have to give this number because it came up at the CIT meeting, but there's rising star indicators. I know on the screen in our handouts it says over 100 indicators. I think I was told there are 150 indicators. And those are discrete pieces that team is constantly working through to identify, have we done that? So it's just a ton of work. So we have to, as we're all saying, make sure that there is that feedback piece, and I'm glad to see that you're focusing on that because it can't do it enough.
Alright, thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Alright, the next report is the Parent-Teacher Advisory Committee Culture and Care Work Group, and Paul, if you can give a little context for that, the team itself and how it's formed.
So let me gather my piece. So again, the PTAC, the board policy requires that we have this team and really giving them that charge. How do they come together? What are those pieces we look at each year? And I don't want to give steal any of their thunder. I know. I'm like, I can see it, and the presentation is over. So I'm going to hand it to Jill, who looks like she's ready.
Yeah.
Who's ready to eyeball me and say, stop.
My first slide. I love you. You may not know me. I'm Jillian Ryan, one of the assistant professors at Hadley, and the funnier of the two. I usually open with a joke, but Eric, you took my glasses off.
There you go,
Jen. So, overview of tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about who we are as the committee, the work that we were able to do this spring, and then recommendations that we wanted to bring to the board. So, we first thought we'd start out by doing introductions. I do want to give kudos to my teachers that are here that are unable to start their summer break until we leave tonight. So I appreciate you guys staying. So I'll start with Jeff, and then we can kind of work our way down this way.
I'm Jeff Burke. I'm the AP over at Ben Franklin.
Patty Jerzak. I'm 8th grade literacy.
Kelly Turner, 6th grade math.
Michelle Gale, Director of Student Assistance, Dr. Pizzor, Director of Assistant Principal at Forest One.
Hi, I'm Jenny Geigen, Social Worker at Forest One.
Okay, so we started meeting about 2 months ago. We met with Paul right around spring break to talk about discipline, and talk about administrative procedure, and where to go from that. And as we can see, I'm not going to read it to you, but one of the requirements of PTAC, it is a school board committee that is required to meet once a year. One of the things we look at, annual review, discipline procedures, any implementations that are made, and most importantly, how that affects student safety. That obviously is our biggest charge. And we broke into two groups. We had one group which Jill worked with, which was the PTAC, and then Michelle Gallo and I, we worked with the culture of care. And about 4 years ago, actually 2010, it was a four-month committee, and we put an all-call out to parents to come together to discuss bullying. Right around that time, we noticed that bullying was really on the rise, and we were noticing it in technology as well. So we started looking at the student handbook. We had many parents in our committee. We had, you know, representation across the district about, you know, what changes may need to be made with our procedure, maybe even the wording. Was it student-friendly, teacher, adult, parent-friendly? You know, sometimes it's not the same thing. So we got together and talked about that. And, you know, I could go into it, but if you go to the Allen D41 website, there's actually a link to the culture of care pamphlet that we put together. And it does a really great, thorough job of talking about that committee's charge and then where we took it. And we said we were going to revisit it each year, and that's where we ended up this year.
Okay. Just to piggyback off of what Jeff started to say a little bit, just some background information about the work of both groups before we go on to any of our recommendations. There were two groups formed. The first one was PTAC, the Parent-Teacher Advisory Committee, and the second group was the Culture of Care, which is the bullying work group for the district. because their charges are so intertwined, we ended up meeting together as both committees. And during the 3 months that we met together, sometimes we would have agenda items that pertain to both groups. And then at the second half of each meeting, we would break out into separate sessions. But at the end of it, we're going to be coming forward today with recommendations from each individual committee, as well as joint recommendations. Just a quick review of what Jeff mentioned in PTAC. PTAC's charge is really to review board policy in relation to student safety. And student discipline is obviously a major piece of student safety. So this year, we were really analyzing board policy around our student discipline policies as well, mm-hmm. and then how that aligns to the student discipline matrix. The culture of care or bullying work group is really looking at bullying prevention protocols that we already have in place, reviewing their effectiveness, and then looking for next steps. Both committees came to the consensus that really a lot of everything we were talking about really ties back to PBIS, which is our Tier 1 universal social and emotional curriculum. So with that, when we were meeting together over those 3 months, we analyzed district-wide data. We didn't look at individual incidents. That wasn't our charge. It was really from a district perspective, what is working, what isn't, and what is our data and the trends from that data telling us about student discipline and our prevention for bullying. And from there, we have recommendations that we're going to share with you tonight.
So I served on the Culture of Care Committee, and our first recommendation is that we would like to implement the universal anti-bullying curriculum in each building. The one that we would like to support is one that goes right along with the PBIS. In fact, it's created by the same person, Rob Warner. And it's got its own separate for K-5 and for the junior high level. Each building would establish their own plans for the curriculum implementation. And it would be embedded right into our PBIS programming that we already do. It would give common language for all of the students, district-wide. And it's a proactive approach, which is something we really wanted, something that was proactive.
Okay, for the PTAC recommendations, we would like to reconvene committee work during the fall of 2015. We typically start meeting after spring break each year, so we want to start up in the fall. When we reconvene, we want to align the discipline matrix to the board policies and administrative procedures. We have a student online handbook. We want to align it to the current board policy and review a board policy and possible recommendations to the policy committee.
All right, we want to be able to strengthen our PBIS Tier 1 committees at each building and to help strengthen the teams at each building. We're hoping to establish a district level PBIS committee so that the elementary schools as well as Hadley can be able to talk, discuss, and collaborate with each other to see what is successful, what is helpful, and what our students still need here.
Jill, can you just back up for 2 seconds and define PBIS?
Positive Behavior Interventions and Supports. Do you want me to give a little overview of PBIS?
Yeah.
So PBIS is how we meet our social emotional learning standard. So when you look at like the old RTI triangle that you probably saw years ago.
And what's RTI?
I put together a draft of information. PBIS is Positive Behavior Interventions and Support. So it's a really proactive model to teaching students social skills. So it's broken up into 3 tiers. So the universal or tier one is how we introduce social skills to all students. And then those students who maybe that's not meeting their needs, and it should meet about 80 to 90% of your students' needs. Then there are tier two interventions that you can target certain students who maybe need a little extra, so like check and check out or some mentoring, things like that. And then tier three, we can have intensive interventions for students who need more intensive interventions toward their social skills. And the bully prevention curriculum ties right into that, so you can do it as part of your universal PBIS initiative, so it's not something necessarily adding on. It's supported through PBIS. It's all research-based and evidence-based. It's used throughout the entire country.
And the way you target the teaching is through review of your discipline data. So we have been working with Gail Minkus, making sure that we can generate certain reports from Skyward where we can end up looking and reviewing each month our discipline data and then really targeting our teaching. I just kind of call it like good parenting, right? So, you know, your child does something wrong and then you really kind of proactively teach them not only the consequence, but how are we going to address this and fix this in the future? So that's kind of what we do as part of our work will be to end up reviewing that discipline data on a monthly basis.
And with that, we look at the trends. So what we reviewed, we looked at really two trends, location of discipline incidents. So was there a high frequency in the lunchroom? Well, that tells us that maybe we need to give some more social skills lesson around respectful lunchroom behavior. And then the incidents that we're seeing. And it ties right into that because bullying is one of the many incidents that could be linked to a BBC report.
We talked about clear expectations. But when I was AP at Lincoln and at Franklin at the same time, and other schools did this as well, we started off our school year with expectation stations for any station that the students moved through throughout their day. That first day, first 2 days of school, we would talk about the expectations at that station. And I was really lucky I got to run the bathroom stations, which was always great. The system was excellent. I'm sure you can believe me on that. But we did, and you know, that's something that we'd like to get back to, seeing those clear expectations as they move through the different settings throughout their day. And that's where those expectations start, right from day one.
And the bullying curriculum that we're recommending, it really works with to make sure we're not stigmatizing any students, so that we're focusing on what the behavior is and where it occurred. So that's how it ties right into PBIS, as opposed to labeling someone a bully or labeling someone a bystander. It just focuses on what that behavior was.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
So these are all of our committee members. We did want to note that we had two student representatives on our culture of care committee this year, and they really brought a great lens for us, I think, in terms of kind of asking them opinions from a student perspective. So that I felt like just something, you know, there are 1,000 names, and of course mine is first, that you can read on here. But we did have two student reps and plan to continue that. As the years go along, and they are typically heavy students. We focus on our eighth graders because I think they're much more mature when they come to the table with ideas and things like that. It's really easy, I think, to motivate sixth graders. But I think, you know, looking at how we can do our best for all of our students, I think the eighth graders bring a really good lens with them.
We have two parent representatives too. Of course, we would always like to see more. It's open to as many.
And that's another reason why PTAC wanted to start reconvening in the fall, to ask parents to start. You know, being a part of this committee in April or May, there's a lot of begging that we do on our end because it's a busy time of year. And it's really kind of jam-packed meeting-wise. I mean, we are meeting every other week, kind of going full sail boogie until probably 6 o'clock at night. So that's our hope, too, is to kind of continue to build that parent participation piece.
Okay, so
ideas that you guys are looking to do, you know, have you taken those ideas and turned around and said, oh, what happened last year and 2 years ago, and would we have that thing that we want to do, is that work, would that have worked in August 2026 or whatever?
So we transitioned from an old discipline data system to a new one. So we have discipline data that we reviewed for the past 2 years and didn't really notice many changes with that. That's why our goal is to tie a lot of our discipline data with the idea of, is PBIS working? And there's clear research foundation in the fact that it is a good program. The schools across Illinois use it.
PBIS is new for that. PBIS is your new.
We've had it for a couple years.
Yeah. But when we transitioned from an old data system of collecting discipline to a new one, so we haven't been able to track the data, where now we have the Skyward system that's able to generate all these reports.
Maybe I asked the question wrong. So you guys are coming with recommendations on how to change PBIS going forward into the new year if something happens related to bullying or whatever it is. Have you guys said, okay, the new one is, you know, candies and lollipops for everybody if they do something wrong. You go back and you say, hey, in August of 2 years ago, if we would have done that, do we think that really would have helped, you know, to kind of hypothesize that the theory that you have would have fit with real life situations.
I think to some extent it comes out of legislation as well, that there needs to be a bullying component into what we're doing with students. And so when we reviewed what the Culture of Care Committee had done in 2011, that proactive piece was missing. So what can we do to be proactive to more positively impact our students? And so that's the piece that we wanted to add to PBIS.
And one of the great open conversations we had with representatives, you know, from every building, you know, why wasn't PBIS working as effectively as when we started? You know, there is it, like, does the attendance need to be revisited? Like, do we need to start, you know, we have Michelle on our team now who's got this amazing PBIS background, so it's a great resource, you know, a great leader for us to utilize as well. So I think that had a big part of it, what maybe were the obstacles, or why wasn't it working as well as we thought it could? And then, you know, consistency across the five buildings, and that's why, you know, building that language and building those programs so it's common.
Now, is engagement, the proactive engagement also include the parents of the students? Mm-hmm. Because that is like...
Yeah. Okay. And that's a big part of PBIS, so that is everyone has that same language, and some is even embedded in some communities, so it goes outside of the school. So definitely parents are
Have you implemented this, the curriculum for PBIS, Michelle? Have you used it?
I have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what was the result? What did you find?
In my former district, yeah. Mm-hmm. A huge positive impact.
What does that mean?
So, I mean, a larger district, and it also had high school, so it was pre-K through high school, so we saw a tremendous decrease in incidence of behavior. So right now I would say as a district we're really implementing universal, so we really haven't gotten to tier two or tier three. And once you get into those levels, which is part of the recommendation to get a district team, you will see more positive impact. So potentially fewer students being recommended for ED eligibility, or fewer students that would maybe need a private placement. So a lot of ramifications that you could see positive impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just really it improves your entire school climate, mm-hmm. which
is the goal. Yeah. Is this the same pamphlet that you guys have?
Culture
the culture of care.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Because I had these from last year, so I keep them in my file. But one of the things that I liked about this is that if you haven't seen this, all this is on our website, so go and take a look at it. But you have some common myths about bullying, what it is, you know, the definition. So I remember last year or the year before, in talking about this, there was this sense of if we don't define it, then kids don't know what it means. And so I think that the application of PBIS, as you talked about it the last year, and now what you're looking to be more proactive is trying to get at it kind of underneath it.
And part of the components of strengthening that tier one at a building and district level was a student education piece, and definitely a parent guardian education piece.
Yeah.
Because having the parent reps on there, they would come home and say, okay, I kind of knew what that was and could get out of the conversation up there, but there would be definitely a lot of benefit to the parent guardian education piece. So that would be part of the work of what that district building level teams are doing.
Yeah. Tied into the social emotional piece, because I know we talk a lot about that. Parents have a lot of questions about that. We embed the learner characteristics, obviously, in the curriculum, but the PBIS piece is really the social emotional learning standards being addressed on a day-to-day basis, teachers making adjustments, those kind of things. Okay. That helps.
I have a question. Two kind of different. So Skyward actually tracks like suspensions, detentions, all of that information, any like disciplinary issues you can track in Skyward. So hopefully moving forward we'll have better data. I just more curious about that. But then the anti-bullying curriculum, how will that be tied into the schools? Like is it a daily thing, or I mean kind of high level curious how that.
So each building will decide how they will do that, but they'll roll it out with their universal. So can you guys put the term cool tools?
Mm-hmm.
With PBIS, it's like the lesson plans. PBIS public school tools are lesson plans. So they could have a cool tool around bullying, and the curriculum actually has, there are six lessons that they could do. The buildings will decide, do they want to do that in place of the existing cool tool? Do they want to do an add-on a cool tool? So they will decide that at the buildings, and you could do it all the beginning of the year. You could roll it out maybe once a month.
Michelle's going to train the assistant principals and the school psychologists, and then we'll go back and train our teams at school.
So you guys will be the leaders of those cool
at our city school.
Mm-hmm. The APs.
Mm-hmm. And the school psychologists.
Mm-hmm. Social workers.
And the social workers too.
The social workers have really written the cool tool.
schools. Jenny can speak to that a little bit, but we changed the delivery of them a little bit each year based on feedback from the teachers. This year, Jenny and some of the other student services team members in with the homeroom teachers and helping to deliver the lessons too. And again, that's individual based on each school, but it's very flexible based on where the teachers are at and how support they would like.
Schools can be about anything. It can be things even such as like having a substitute teacher or after school activities to keep that language common and just really showing the expectations. So it can be whatever the students need, and you can create a lesson plan quickly and help the teacher be able to teach that.
Just one quick statistic. Last year, whoever it was that was facilitating this talked about a U.S. Department of Education where they do data collection, and they started back in 2005. So I just peeked in there to see if they had new data, and this is as of middle of May 2015. So it said the reported prevalence of bullying among students aged 12 to 18 dropped to 22% after remaining stubbornly around 28% for the past 10 years. So, I mean, they talk about some of, you know, what that is kind of based on, but they don't say PBIS directly here, I don't think, but they talk about the type of prevention and connections between parent, guardian, exactly what you're talking about. So I just thought it was interesting to see if last year to this year there was some, change in it, and there's, you know, happily a decline, and I think maybe it's because we're focusing so much on it. So it's great information. Yeah.
I just had a question. I know you've got an increased level of data based on the Skyward platform. Have you seen any overarching themes based on this additional data?
You know, we've only been using Skyward for the last 2 years.
Right, I understand. Right?
And so we didn't necessarily notice a change because we realized we weren't really continuing to strengthen that committee and that committee's work and really tracking the data for desk. The idea is, you know, you have discipline data, and then you focus on areas of need, address that, and then you kind of track that data. Are we seeing a decrease now in our
referral? So you're seeing a decrease. So the theme that you're seeing is a decrease.
Not right now. So not right now. In the last 2 years, only because we really haven't tried to strengthen this PBIS model. So we realized that what we were doing wasn't really showing necessarily, again, over only the last 2 years. So that's what our goal is and our charges is going to be this year, strengthening this committee and then hopefully coming back and saying, oh, yeah, just like the research shows, we've definitely seen a decrease in our data.
Scott.
So as a point of process, you're making these recommendations. Certainly, you're the subject matter experts in this, and so there's a sense that through, you know, Paul, that this will move forward. We have next year, we have a whole series of reports already scheduled in, but it would be interesting if you could recommend to Paul where there might be some, you know, touch point that you could come back and just do a quick 5-minute presentation to let us know how's the data looking, you know, what's the response from parents on this, whatever it might be that you think is valuable. If you could, you know, do that, that'd be great.
Okay.
Even how the training went, you know, from Michelle to APs and social workers, et cetera. Yeah.
We promise to girls on one side, boys on
the other. Yeah, okay. That's always helpful.
All right. So I never like to be bullied.
Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Great job. Good teamwork.
Yeah.
Really good teamwork. Yeah.
All right, thank you. Under discussion items, first one is the Abraham Lincoln additional cubby storage, and Bob and Paul.
Okay. So tonight we're bringing forward for discussion the concept of adding an additional 94 cubbies to the Lincoln LMC project. On our original plan, and I apologize to back up a step, Bob handed these out during Finance Committee. I think everybody has one, so you can see the location of them. So they would be in that main corridor near the LMC. So one of the pieces when we originally looked at this were A, B, C, and trying to keep the cost under that $235,000. One of the decisions we made at that time was to take off this C recommendation for the cubbies to meet that threshold of $235,000. As the bid results have come in, the bid results have come in under that cost and would allow for these 94 cubbies to be added in. The purpose behind the cubbies, currently there's a single hook for the Lincoln students to be able to hang their stuff in that area. But with the additional cubbies, we know that it will be a better corridor, a safer corridor in the long run for our students. So just a little background. Bob, anything that you would add to that? Okay. Back to you.
All right. Any discussion? We have the report in front of us, either hard copy you made or in our board book. And so the information is included in terms of the cost and also, again, the numbers.
Eric,
any questions?
At the Finance Committee, I made
a
statement. I'll go ahead and make it just so it's on public record. But,
sure.
And I said this was kind of a hot button for me. We were told that Think Tank was not going to cost us any money. Because we're moving the kids through the building now, with specialization, that's why the need for the cubbies. So that was the first comment I made. The second comment I made was, if we needed these so badly, they should have been in the first recommendation. So they weren't, and I liken it to, well, we saved some money, so let's go ahead and spend it. And it's not going to be used for additional cubbies, mm-hmm. but I just think that if we didn't necessarily need them that badly, then I won't agree to spend the extra $18,000. We could probably save it, and I made a comment that we could probably use it towards an aid drill and down in the classroom for kids for a year. So.
Okay. Just a quick point of clarification, and it's I know that we've talked about this before with the discussions at 2.5, whatever, it's 3 years ago now for Think Tank. I know that there's been the comment made that the Think Tank recommendations would not cost. It's my recollection that the Think Tank, in terms of an innovation group, was to be thinking and discussing from an innovation perspective and not getting necessarily, what this is my term, hung up on cost, but to understand that they were to be thinking about the what-ifs and the blue sky and kind of creative thinking around it. So, but I appreciate what you're saying, Kurt. And I mean, one of the things as I looked on this, and thank you for this from Finance, is Linda Schweikhofer talked about this the last time, and that is the safety and security, especially in wintertime when you have extra boots and coats and all these other things hanging around. So I guess my assumption is that when you took a look and could identify some dollars for this, that it was a chance to deal with all of that from a safety perspective. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. Yeah, and one of the pieces that, as Kurt said, in the Finance Committee, one of the pieces that Mrs. Schweikhofer pushed back on was that cost associated with this. That really was a choice between where were you going to put stuff. So in their current classrooms, teachers could put the coats, the backpacks within those closets. That meant all the teacher supplies were out in the hallways on top of other cabinetry stacked up. Teachers would have to access that information there, or that it could create a safety issue there with boxes stacked on top of each other. So it really was moving the boxes back into the classroom so they're more easily accessible, and having the coats on the outside on the hooks. So from her perspective, that's where she believed that there was an additional cost associated with this, that it was an either or, where are you putting stuff, and eventually we needed a place for both.
Okay. So, discussed further in the Finance Committee is one note on the Think Tank stuff, and I've said this before, there was discussion at advisory committees that I was on that there wasn't a budgetary change with Think Tank being implemented. Even these minor ones, I remember Dr. Rebach stating that. So maybe on the board approval level, it was something different. Mm-hmm. So that's my recollection. But we live in here now. Mm-hmm. We don't live in the past. I think it's important that we make proper decisions based on the situations in front of us. But I think what Kurt noted is duly noted, and I was there at least at a peer advisory committee where I did hear that said. That said, the other point that I made, which was likewise to Kurt, when we're saving money, we want to save money overall. Saving trumps everything for me, though. And I would have hoped if we found, if this is a safety concern, which I do know this area, and to me, my daughter's classroom last year, it was right there in the Bishop's class, and I know that this is a very high traffic area, and there was stuff all over the place, there's no doubt about that. And if we found budget savings somewhere else, that we would have came because it's a safety issue. But I think the best policy is ultimately outside of the safety issue, because that trumps everything. When we're saving money, let's save it for the long run, not to find something to spend it. But I understand Bob did a good job with his presentation explaining that, and I think he did a thorough job here. So for me, that does trump it.
So Joe, to that, is that, because I'm not 100% familiar with this area. So if the Cubbies were there, there's going to be hooks there. This is a high traffic area, right?
It's a very high traffic area.
So this is
the LMC.
I'm sure it's not a fire code issue to have just the hooks there, but it would definitely help from a safety perspective if things were tucked away in those Cubbies.
In my opinion, when I've been in this area, yes. As a parent, dad who's been in my classroom, yes.
Yeah, just trying to get a picture of where the hallway was it like a back theater somewhere?
It's that main hallway from the beginning of the building all the way through.
All right. Yeah,
Stephanie, you had something you wanted to say?
I guess I was just going to say
You
know, I know we've heard and up in some presentations in the past that there's some things that, you know, our hallways weren't designed to handle this traffic flow, and that's been kind of one of the reasons given for why we need a new school, because we need less students moving through the building, and I'm not saying I agree with that, but, you know, we're now putting Cubbies into the hall and taking up more hall space with this design, too, and it just, in my own mind, kind of reflects some poor planning on the overall plan, because in the past, the codes were in the classroom, and the teacher storage was on top of that big black, thick line. They weren't sticking into the hallway, so I don't know if anyone's evaluated that we're going. I know we already have the hooks there now, so I guess it's a moot point, but I do wonder. I know in Lincoln, down in the first grade wing, and at the other schools, wherever they have Cubbies built that are not the new Cubbies by the new STEAM classroom, it's more like a section, kind of like partitions with three or four hooks in between. I don't know if something like, have we explored doing something like that versus this? Would it be, would it save some money? Does it take up less space into the hallway? I know the Cubby design is pretty... takes up a lot of space, but with all the different, it may not look the way the pretty little Cubbies, but it seems like that's what we have in, you know, 80% of the schools is just the hooks and the partitions in between versus individual Cubbies for students. So I don't know if that's been evaluated from a cost standpoint for pursuing.
Well, this is for discussion tonight, and then we'll bring this back on June 22nd. Is there interest in the board? From the board to have an assessment of that cost? I mean, is that worthwhile? Do board members want that? Would it make a difference in terms of your...
That was going to be one of my questions. I don't know if putting Cubbies there and then doors opening, if it's a high traffic area, are we going to be creating bottlenecks in that hallway?
Well, the Cubbies don't have doors on them, is my understanding.
Oh, no.
They're open. Yeah, they're open. They're just
open.
In and out. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, but what Stephanie is describing are these kind of larger multiple, which have their own issues with coats and getting mixed up or that type of thing. I mean, every situation has its ups and, you know, pluses and negatives. But think about that for a minute, and then before we close, we'll ask that question again if we think you want to have that done. Kurt has something in mind.
It's always interesting to me. I mean, it's a safety concern. If it was a safety concern, why didn't we do it to begin with? If it was really a safety concern, then we should have made this recommendation. Staff should have said, hey, this is a safety concern. It's slightly over budget, but because we're concerned about this, we should do that versus painting me as somebody that doesn't concern about safety, which is what I feel
no.
is somewhat happening here. But you know, so that would be my assessment on that. If it was that big a safety concern, staff should have brought this to us to be in it. So it apparently couldn't have been, or it would have been part of the first part of it. I think we had the extra money on the savings, and they thought, well, we could put the extra cubbies in. Second part of it, and Dr. Gordon and I, we had this conversation at finance, but and I think I used the term hogwash about Linda Schweikoff's assessment of that. I did go in and talk to some of the teachers about that. With stepping, I toured Lincoln Schools. So when we were told by the principal at Lincoln at the time was that at teachable moments, the boxes were up in a place where they couldn't actually get them at that moment. So I asked teachers, was that something that occurred regularly? And the response I got was no. I mean, the boxes had things in it, but those were things that they would plan ahead for and have those boxes retrieved, and then they would be part of a lesson maybe a week or two down the road, and then they'd be put back. So so that at least was what she told us specifically to that. And then I would just say that there was a counter to that in terms of what the teachers that I talked to, just in generally asking them, they didn't believe that that was necessary. Now, if you want to...
So what's the connection between the cubbies and the storage? Is there a... If you do the cubbies, well, you take the storage away, or?
Well, no. I mean, I guess what they're saying is the storage is now it's easier to get to, which is maybe that could be true.
Mm-hmm.
But
because it's
in the classroom.
I just want to make that
so that could be true.
Okay.
You know, I'm not debating that, but that's not what was told to Stephanie and I. What was told to Stephanie and I was that because of I mean, you can always get one of Dave's crew members. They'll be happy. They're great guys. They'll be happy to go ahead and pull those down if a teacher needs to say, hey, I need this box of 2 weeks or whatever a week, and that's how things work. But what we were told was that in teachable moments they had an aha moment and said, wow, there's something in that box, and those things just didn't occur. So that was the impetus for her telling us that, and that there's a disconnect to at least what she thought was to what at least the staff that I talked to. So
thank you.
I have a question. Is it Bob? Maybe you can answer. I actually have two questions. Question number one, what does the cubby look like? Can you just give me a rough idea. I'm trying to visualize it.
It's a rectangular box without a front.
Okay.
And they're in all of the new additions.
So it's dimensions,
it's kid-sized kind of closet.
12 inches wide by 16 inches tall.
Okay. And I look at the, again, I'm looking very simply on this, and I'm looking at the costs based on this is for additional ones. So I'm assuming this will be the same for all the cubbies in terms of the cost. But you know, I'm coming up with about a $200 per cubby.
That sounds about right.
That's installed.
That's installed.
Yeah, and that's typical. That's typical in the
pretty typical for locker. This is all your plastic laminate.
Okay. Is there any value in requesting Bob to add something to his plate to do a between now and the next board meeting to get what's the word I'm looking for? Estimate?
An estimate.
For the other...
what Stephanie has suggested.
Is anybody interested in that?
I'm with it. I'm okay with that. I don't think it hurts to take a look at
okay.
it.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I think it's... I think it'd be relatively... I mean, if it's a per-cost unit, it's that times 94.
Paul, is that...
If that's what if that's what the board... I mean, I'm not quite sure what
but
it
I'm
looked like other than a hook.
Maybe
I mean,
if you could just give us some idea,
design it.
You indicated that maybe like a three bank and then a divider, then a three bank. Is that kind
I
of?
I think that's what they look like.
There are some in some of our schools.
Like
we can look at one.
Have a shelf at the top.
Sure.
Yeah.
And these should too, just as individual.
What I'm trying to do is provide an option that might be more palatable, whatever,
well, and
in terms
know
of
if that would take up less space as well.
You yeah, exactly.
A lot of space.
That's what I mean. Is there
traffic in the hallway? Would it maybe be
right? Is there more value in that
wall space?
Sure.
Up by it.
Yeah.
I think having a comparative analysis.
Okay.
Really helpful.
Thank you.
The one thing though is, you know, we've made a decision in the design that we've done with the new additions,
mm-hmm.
and these are the cubbies. If I understand it, Bob, that was
correct.
You stated it earlier, so
right,
I think
they
I
are.
Understand it right now. They're the same design. Mm-hmm. There's a reason we went with that design. Clearly,
I
if
got
the
it.
Cost differential is
mm-hmm.
huge, you may want to make it from a cost standpoint, or if
mm-hmm.
it saves space. But
I think the goal of this is to get kids boots, wet boots, and shoes, and jackets, and all this little stuff that they own in the wintertime off the floor and out of the hallway so they're not tripping on it.
Right.
And if that's done one way or the other, then, you know, perhaps spending a few minutes on this is valuable.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, thanks.
So we'll look at those other...
One of the things was to do it in an individual cubby, and that's what we did in design, so that kids don't mix their boots and coats and hats
right,
up.
Which is the other piece of
so
that,
that
so we'll see.
One of the things.
Right.
So we've got that direction. We'll look at that piece,
thank
work
you.
With Jack...
Thank you. Thanks for doing that. We'll get a picture. Okay. We have bid results for the Churchill Classroom Edition to replace the remaining portables.
Okay. So we have the recommendations in front of you for the replacement of the final four portables at Churchill. And the recommendations follow the preliminary budgeting, bidding, design, bidding, bid opening, and our vetting of each of the low-responsive, responsive bidders for each trade, which is what is in the recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much across the board, it's a pretty straightforward recommendation. The low ASRA bidder is what we're recommending. We had a few instances where we only had one bid for each trade. I think we had four of those, right? In each case, the low bidder is already working in the district on one of the other four schools. So in those cases, you know, the competition might have looked at it and said, it's really not worth our time to go after because there's always somebody working there. Or it's just a situation where the trade work is so specific to a manufacturer or a certain discipline that a distributor has a competitive advantage in. We only got the one bid.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the only unique one was we did have a situation where the plumbing contract was a low bid. There was a tie. There were two bidders that were the exact same number. So this is something we have encountered before. And so Fred and Neil in our office met with the two low bidders who agreed to a coin cost.
Really?
And that's how the bid was awarded.
That was good.
That's how our board bid is recommended. We make a decision on who it's awarded to.
Yeah.
Both contractors and plumbing are working in the district on the additions. They both have been doing a good job, so it really is just a coin toss.
I read that. I thought, oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I could go on, but I'll leave it to questions if you have.
Is there any gain to having already having contractors working in the district in terms of their the cost or other ancillary?
Yeah, I think the district is getting a good value for the money. It's a combination of having people working here and keeping their crews working and keeping them going in through the fall and winter months, which is a huge advantage in the construction market.
Mm-hmm.
The timing of this addition is such that you know, we want to get it under roof before the snow flies so that we can finish the interior trades into the spring. And that just helps everybody. It helps you. The timing of the bidding is good because the work is starting at the conclusion of the summer,
mm-hmm.
when there's an intense amount of schoolwork in the region. And that's coming to an end, but people want to keep their people busy. And we're starting in basically mid to late August. So there's a lot of things, I think, that are going to your advantage on this project. We had preliminarily estimated $2.5 to $2.8 million for construction.
Mm-hmm.
With contingency, we're at 2.1 with some allowances and fees and general conditions for Frederick Quinn, we're at 2.5. So we're at the low end of the range, and that was that range was based on the bid cost of the other additions that we did. So you're basically paying just about the same amount of cost per square foot as you were previously, if not a little bit better.
That's great. Other comments, questions?
Just two quick things brought up in Finance Committee. One is there is a contract that, is, that they're requesting for the carpentry and drywall. And this question was asked and answered. Just it is, there's a big difference between the low bidder and the rest of the bids. And they have discussed with us, Jack told us how they went through it to make sure that that contractor understood it. And he gave him a chance to relook at everything, and that was his bid. And that's an important process, I believe it is, and that's why he went.
Yeah, we meet with them face to face.
That's an industry thing that you definitely want to make sure you're not putting somebody in a situation where they're a little bit so low that they can't perform.
Right. And I know you've talked about that before.
Right. So I appreciate you guys going through that. The other thing I requested is just I'd like to see the whole budget 425 with the allowances and the overhead and profit and general conditions, which you said was 9 months.
Yeah, we based it on 9 months.
9 months, so that we can see the overall budget. It does. One of the allowances is about $25,000 of premium time, which I look as a added contingency because we've used very little premium time to date, just in special interest in it. Like instances at Churchill recently because of the dirty school odor for the roof, which I think was a good use of that. So that's just some of the things we discussed.
Yeah, no, that's good to know how much you project we might use or not from that. And I know it's a call, it's a question.
Right.
Okay. Anything else?
Joel, I just have a question for you. Are you looked at all the contracts. Is there anything that would need to be a concern? The two areas of concerns he's addressed. The single bidders, they've compared it to per unit prices and the other ones, which is a very important comparison. You get nervous when you only have one bid. He gave the rationale and the due diligence they did afterwards on unit pricing, so that's important. And then the one I just brought up, because I never want to get into a contract where somebody can't pick one. We're still going to have to deal with it.
Right.
Yeah. And you're comfortable with the contingency numbers?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Stephanie?
I guess before we move forward with this, I just would like to have some discussion about considering what I suggested that at the last meeting that we look into, and I know this isn't really directed at your expertise, but not an issue you can resolve. but look at adding two additional classrooms to the second set of additions. It may push out the timeline a little bit, but as long as we could still meet timing to be completed for August of next year to be used for the 16-17 school year, would it be worth looking into wondering if the Churchill and Forest Glen construction that we're doing right now, if we're running on the budget, if that could be used to help pay for those other additions. But I still see it as, we talk about inequity. In the finance meeting that we just had, we were talking about Churchill and a lot of those kids not having the opportunity to do after-school activities. So one of the things Lori was talking about. And in my mind, right now, we're leaving Churchill inequitable in that they have no classroom space to use for any flex space. If they have a bump year, they have absolutely no space. And all of the other elementary schools, those classrooms are being used for things, but they're not being used for classrooms. And if push came to shove and we needed a classroom, it could be obtained at all of the elementary schools except for Churchill. And so I'm not, by no means am I saying that this is done, this is addressed, if this addresses all the facility issues at Churchill, but I think it's about equity, spending money wisely versus having to come back later. I am concerned that if we believe we're going to go to referendum, and I believe it's not going to be successful, Churchill is still going to have the same number of students they have now. They're going to have no options for growth except to put more portables in, which I don't think anybody wants. So if we could take a little bit of time now and explore it and see what the cost would be, would it be worth doing just to give them some breathing room because they have none right now. I by no means want to impact the timeline or change these classrooms being available for 16-17, but from the timeline I've seen now, they're really not going to be usable for next school year. So don't know. I said the same thing at the last meeting. I'm saying it again now. I don't know if I need to make a motion to put it to a vote so everyone can say you're crazy. We're not going to do that. But I think it is worth exploring.
Well, this came up at the last meeting, and there was option for discussion, and folks weighed in, and I think tied it into, again, the discussion on the community engagement piece, which is really the conversation, putting this conversation, not all pieces, which is facilities, what community members want to see in their school district, certainly options like an all-day kindergarten, but also just facilities in general. And so, I mean, my sense of it was that we, you know, heard your request, but I did not hear, and I'm going to open it up for discussion, any desire to further that. So I'll open it up to other board members, and, you know, what we have on the table is this bid for moving forward. That's what we're talking about. If there's any interest in changing that, I need to hear that now.
Well, I would...
Consensus.
I'd echo what Stephanie just said. You know, if you go under the belief that Stephanie and I believe is that you're going to have a failed referendum. So you're going to then be left with a situation where you're probably, if you decided the one piece, which is full day kindergarten, needs to go forward, you're going to have to go back into Churchill and add those classrooms. So it just seems to make logical sense to us to look at that, doing it now. You have the construction people there. You're not going back in a second time. And I think that's where we're coming from with this piece, because if you have a failed referendum, you're still going to have the same number of kids at Churchill. We've got some timeline I think we could probably look at. Stephanie said it, we're not going to have kids in the next year. So, we're not asking or indicating we want to delay the timeline on this, but it's... It's true, and if you have a failed referendum, even if you don't do full-day kindergarten, we hear about the bumps. Churchill has no room for bumps right now, as it is. So I think that's probably where we're coming from. So
okay.
Same page.
Any other comments?
So you're saying find $2 million additional in the budget?
Well, I don't know that it's going to cost. To do these four rooms is $2 million, but how much of that... I don't know how much more it would be to do the two rooms. Well, I'm asking for that.
Yeah, let's just
for those numbers.
Split it in half. Because you have two rooms versus four. Let's use easy math. This is 2.5, 2.6 plus soft cost for design and all the other things that go into that. So another 2 rooms. So you're at 2.8. So there's 1.4. 700 in the classroom. If you just do that. I do think the experts in the audience who just presented speak to this. These bids are, there's time with these bids. I mean, if you delay it to go redesign everything, go through our approval process, I don't know, just pick a date. We're approving it at fast track. We have special meetings and all that in July. Maybe you get it by the end of July. Three meetings, all the stuff we have to do, see the design, ask Ron and his team, that's the architects we use, redo the design. Your approval is September 20-something, and then you're going to have to rebid everything at that point.
You got to go back to the village.
Right, you got to go back to the village, okay? So I missed 30 days. So now you're in... Just doing a normal construction design timeline here, Stephanie. You're into October, so you're starting the six classrooms in the middle of, well, the beginning of winter, so you're really not doing that. I don't see it working. I'm just going through that really quickly. I know it's back of the envelope. And these costs here that are 2.6, one thing that, as a new board member 2 years ago, I recognized going through the old plans, and we talked to this extensively, because there was basically 8 years ago or whatever it was, 10 years ago, these plans were already looked at. The cost to get them done was a lot less because, like it or not, construction costs go up on a normal basis. Mm-hmm. I think we're getting benefits here, though, because we're getting repeat contractors who are comfortable with the team we have together. Mm-hmm. So you are getting benefits. Would you still see the same cost next spring? I don't know. I don't. You're going to see union wage increases and all the rest.
So there is a change to the timeline.
I don't see how there isn't, because you have to get village approval, you have to design them, 6 weeks to design them. We have to approve them, three meetings to approve them. The one thing I don't want to do is stop this process, because there is something else here. And correct me if I'm wrong, Jack, but we are more or less going right into construction. We've redesigned the four classrooms already so that these classrooms join them. And in doing that, we have cost savings, and you have to do them together. You can't bend away, and you can't, and you do temporary things to do that. But that's some of the reasons we have these cost savings. I don't know if they're lost if you can leave this until January or February or March of next year.
Well, and that's one of the reasons that I'm suggesting looking at it now, because I think there will be cost savings to putting on these rooms now versus coming back in 3 years.
I agree, but I think you're losing cost savings today, so is that the wash? I mean, we made this decision.
But the wash, Joel, is that you've got two classrooms after the failed referendum, right? That's what you have to leave.
This is a larger issue. I think the larger issue is, and I mean, I appreciate Stephanie bringing this up, and you brought it up last week. Can I talk for a second? Because I think I'm on the same page as Dean. The larger issue, and we're going to have a presentation in just a little while that shows that we have 24 community members who have already put their name on a piece of paper that says, I want to be on this community facilities task force. I want to weigh in on this. I want to give my opinion. We heard somebody talk tonight and say he would be willing to be a leader on this. You know, we have people in the community who want to weigh in and talk about the very thing that we're looking to take away in terms of conversation. So, I appreciate what you're saying, because I think what's underneath it, Stephanie, is positive, which is how do we provide space. The larger issue for me is that it's not just about two classrooms like we're putting on Lego rooms. It's a larger conversation about multiple facility pieces. And so I am not interested in deterring this move forward, for the very reason that those larger issues need to be vetted by the community. And to take that away, I think, is taking away, the intention of having a larger conversation.
Dean, go ahead.
We're talking about approving these bid packages now, and we get off on a referendum that we're not even talking about doing. We haven't, as a board, said we're going to do a referendum.
Well, we've got information from Unicom Arc that at the end of it says that
we, as a board, have not said we're going for a referendum.
It's a recommendation that the staff is looking for.
We, as a board, I'm not part of the staff. I'm part of this board. And I have not voted to go for or against the referendum yet.
Understood.
And I'm not going to use your opinion on something that hasn't happened yet to drive a $2 million construction project. I would like to stick with the project that we have, that we've worked through, for all these reasons we just talked about, to meet these timelines, do something with actionable data that we have today, as opposed to saying, well, I don't think something's going to happen in the future, so I'm not going to do anything now. Or I'm going to do something different now. We know these four classrooms are needed. We agonized over this earlier this year. Churchill spent a lot of time convincing us of this. We said, you're right, we found the savings, we found the funding for this. Then we went forward. If we continually stop and redo everything, then we wouldn't have replaced all the portables that we did. Because there's a lot of these same people saying, you can't replace those portables, and if you replace those portables, you're gonna hurt a chance for a referendum.
Yeah, we would.
And there's no way I'm going to tell this community, well, geez, you need a referendum to replace the portables, if we didn't. And we didn't need a referendum to replace those portables. But there are people saying that you're going to affect that. So I think this is a discussion today about whether we're going to go with the plan that we have. It has nothing to do with the referendum.
We're just offering. We weren't on board, Dean, so we're offering up obviously we would disagree that, you know, what you just assessed, we don't agree was a good long-range plan. And we've said that repeatedly. You and I can disagree about that, but and that's fine. I'm not trying to offend you. I'm just trying to state that what we believe to be the truth, and you have a right to have that opinion. But
thank you.
Let me finish here, please. Mm-hmm. In the end, we have $20 million. I mean, we just sat with Bob last week. We have $20 million in our savings account. I mean, so we certainly could find some revenue.
Well, no, so no, you may have it in your savings account, but you have certain targets that you need to maintain in terms of maintaining credit.
Yep. Credit markets is not.
And we have policy.
We don't have 28% right now.
We don't have $20 million just to write a check.
Okay, I'd like to get back to the point. Stephanie's made her point, and she's.
I'm trying to correct
but it's
misinformation that you're trying to put out there. We have $20 million to write a check for something.
We have 20.
You don't have $20 million, Kurt.
That's what we saw.
Kurt, thank you.
Then you missed.
Thank you, Patrick. Stephanie, your request was. Might we.
Has nothing to do with the referendum. I'm trying to advocate for Churchill in advance. The first time we did phase one on Churchill, I was a parent that said, why are we leaving Churchill? It's the only elementary school with classrooms and portables. Because that was the plan from day one with phase one. Lincoln was supposed to have portables left too, but those are going to be used for STEAM labs. And I said, why are we even leaving portables at Lincoln for STEAM labs? And why is Churchill the only school with classrooms and portables? And I was told, well, we're just going to put four rooms at every school. And I said, I don't think that's equitable. Churchill has eight classrooms and portables. The other schools have four. And then what happens? The Churchill parents have to meet. They have to create a petition to get the second set of additions done. I'm just merely trying to, I toured all of the elementary schools. And in touring them, I know that the other three elementary schools have classroom space that they could use if they needed it for a classroom, and Churchill has absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. Looking at the timeline that was out there, I am not in construction. I do not know the details, so maybe it's not possible, but it's something that I thought we should explore to be proactive to give this school more space. And I find it ironic that I'm being told, well, we shouldn't spend any more money and put any more rooms on Churchill until we have the facilities task force meet and to determine our vision, but we were more than willing to move forward with the Lincoln Library renovation before the facility.
That's apples and oranges, Stephanie.
Well,
it's two different things.
It's the money on construction.
It's two different things. I think you've requested that the board, at this board meeting, decide whether or not this timeline is something that we should change and move forward. And I'm hearing, and Patrick weigh in finally, and Drew, at least some voices that say this is what we're looking at in terms of discussion that will be brought up for vote at the next meeting. So where do we stand? Patrick, in a couple of minutes, where are you?
I just don't want to jeopardize finishing this, to your point, the project on Churchill to get things done. So back in the envelope, trying to get this done, timelines, village, no. I just don't think we can do it right now.
Okay. Drew, any?
I guess I have to mirror Patrick's thought. You know, again, the concept of adding two more classrooms has an assumption that's necessary for full day kindergarten, and that's a discussion that I don't think we've resolved. So I'm interested in putting those additional classrooms on Churchill, the way the program is structured. I think that needs to be done. I think that eliminates the portables. But I'm not in favor of adding more classrooms until we have a clear, definable plan and even a decision in terms of full day kindergarten.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for everybody's comments. So this will come back to us on June 22nd. And thank you, Jack, also. Thank you both very much. Consent agenda for board members.
We got one more item. I think copy of rates.
Yep. Thank you.
Oh, that was left off of mine. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Copy your...
Copy paper bid results.
Bid results.
So we went out to bid as we typically do this time of year, and annually the Finance Committee and the Board received an update in terms of what paper costs are anticipated to be next year. We received several bids on May 7th. The lowest price was from Unisource at $26.70 per case, or $48,700 for the year. Unisource has been the supplier of our copy paper for a number of years, and that is the recommendation that we're moving forward with this year. And there are some slight savings over what we paid last year.
Okay. Any questions? This again will come back on June 22nd. All right. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Kurt. All right. Action items. Under the consent agenda, at our desks, if you hadn't seen them, there was a couple of edits on the May 26 regular minutes that Nancy has since corrected, since posting, and they've been provided for you. This is in the blue copy of what we have. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately?
Can I just ask a question?
Uh-huh.
What are the two?
They were, I'll defer to Nancy. She took them from Stephanie earlier today.
They were Stephanie's comments related to the community engagement discussion.
What page number?
On page 4.
4 of 7.
I'm used to red lines. So third paragraph.
Okay. The third full paragraph starting Mrs. Clark commented, so there were corrections made. Stephanie, are those accurate?
No, that was it, just around that discussion.
Okay.
She just added a couple things.
Okay, great.
Not corrected, just added.
Edits. Okay. That was all. Thanks, Joe. All right. Anything
well,
else?
I wanted to, as far as pulling an item from the consent agenda, mm-hmm. I wanted to see about pulling the administrative compensation. I don't have an issue with it.
Mm-hmm.
Just as far as the process, in my mind, this isn't a benign item. I think it's something that should be motioned and voted on. I wanted to recommend pulling it off the consent agenda for that reason, not because I have. I don't need to discuss it.
Okay, so we'll pull that. I also had some comments actually to make after consent about that too. So.
I have just a comment off of that. Going forward, and maybe we have this discussion in the future, but the administrative compensation package, I think probably we should talk openly about that in terms of the percentage that we give Dr. Gordon in the future, so that's out there. And then Dr. Gordon can use that money internally with his administrative staff to decide that, but we should probably talk about it openly, decide that. And then I think on all our administrative compensation packages, we should pull those. We should not put those on the consent agenda. That we should just be motioning those and voting. Stephanie and I asked several people at our training about that, and they all did it that way. They weren't putting them in the consent agenda. They were putting them as a separate item that was motioned.
Okay. So we'll pull that from the consent agenda. And so, Nancy, guide on the next step for that.
You'll need to pull the entire personnel report since it's all encompassed
in that. Okay, that's what I thought. Okay.
So let me read the motion. This is also going to be the personnel, the human resources portion off.
Right.
Do I have to make a motion to take it out?
No, you can just pull it.
You can pull it.
We can pull it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And I will just, as a point of information, at the end of the consent, once we take our vote, I will make a comment that I was going to make about those in anyway. So I'll just do that to give some feedback on those. All right. Anything else?
I just have a clarifying question. Stephanie, are you comfortable with the amended minutes here? Is that what?
Yeah, I talked to Nancy.
Okay.
I know you put a lot of time into crafting this. So
okay.
Give your credit for that.
Thanks, Drew. Okay. We will pull the human resources report, which includes personnel. And then may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which now includes item 2, finance, facilities, and operations, the appointment of school district treasurer, the prevailing wage act, school district payment order, May 20th, 2015 through June 3rd, 2015. And then item 3, other matters, approval of board meeting minutes, May 11th, 2015, regular meeting amended, May 26th, finance committee of the whole special meeting, May 26th, 2015, regular meeting, and May 26th, 2015, regular meeting closed session. May I have a motion?
Motion. Second.
Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Alter?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes, thank you. So in point of information around the question that was just brought up in terms of pulling the personnel report, I heard Stephanie say that she has no issue with the administrative compensation piece, but I did want to make the point, which I plan to do, that this board discussed in executive session the administrative contracts, including TRS payments. And it was decided that the board would not change that for this year based on the fact that the new board was seated close to when administrative contracts were being discussed, but agreed that next year we would start that discussion in January of 2016, if I'm remembering that correctly, these are my notes, so that we could get ahead of that and have that conversation about administrative contracts.
TRS payments?
Correct, yes.
I think that was in June. No, I thought we were going to talk about it at the second meeting in June.
That was not my. Those are not my notes. That we would get ahead of the contract discussion for the 6 months previous to those contracts being discussed. I'll go back and look at that.
I thought it was earlier. Too.
I thought was we it said earlier? We wanted to go ahead and start.
I'm not sure it was June, but
I know it's definitely we wanted at least to have.
Did we say fall of
finance committee? To have some of these conversations.
Right. All right, let me correct that. So I'll put fall of 2016 and then it would be a finance committee, at least initial conversation. So
I was heard, I thought it was the June 22nd meeting. I don't know that we were looking to resolve it, but at least start having the discussion. So
why don't we start it at the finance committee level, if you guys are good with that, and then, as Patrick just suggested, and then bring it up.
Yeah,
everybody's
I think...
welcome to come to like stuff.
Yeah, no, and I would... I would agree with that because I think at finance, one of the things that you do for the rest of the board is vet some of the detail around it with Bob, so you could bring that to us. And if you have room on your agenda June 22nd, that's fine. I don't know that it has to be at the June meeting. We could certainly start this in the fall when we come back in August, but I'll leave that to the finance committee to decide in terms of your agenda. Okay. All right, so that was that. Now, to Kurt's point, the pool for administrative compensation is a pool given to the superintendent, like in other organizations, where there's a percent given and then the superintendent decides the raises for administrators. So the pool for the administrator compensation was 2.7, and then the union-exempt recommendation pool was 2.8%. Mm-hmm. The outcome of that was, just so that, again, this is noted, the district did not use the entire pool for either group. So the entire pool of 2.7% for the administrators or 2.8% for the union-exempt was not used in its entirety. Dr. Gordon determined how to use those dollars as administrator. So I wanted to make sure that we knew that, and we'll pull that from the personnel report and come back to it. Right. Thank you.
We got to come back to it now.
Yeah. So, may I have a motion? Can I put this back on? All right. May I have a motion for the consent agenda item under human resources, which includes personnel report, item 1, employment recommendation, item 2, administrator compensation, and item 3, union exempt compensation. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Okay. Roll call.
Discussion.
I'm sorry, discussion? We just discussed it. Any other questions about that or corrections? Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. All right. Thank you. Okay, superintendent recommendations.
We're bringing forward a recommendation, but one of the things that I wanted to clarify, because at the last board meeting, it felt like we may not have gotten all the way into the conversation on the two companies that were coming forward. It felt like we were a little all over the place. So bringing forward this recommendation, but if there feels like there needs to be more discussion on it tonight, and then we move it forward to next week's action, please let me know where you're at on it. I'm not sure if it was if the board felt like it was fully vetted, that this piece in front of you was fully vetted by you prior to action. I am bringing forward the recommendation for Unicom. Based off of Unicom's work history with other districts in the area, Wheaton, Lyle, Elmhurst, and a number of others, Eric has been able to reach out to a community member, to two community members in Lyle. Very impressive feedback from those community members. I know we've, to Stephanie and Kurt, reflected on a very limited viewpoint of what occurred at the Unicom work with Wheaton. But I really feel like they have a strong track record of success. And not in reference to a referendum success or failure, but strong recommendation recommendation around the work they do with community members and bringing community members together and large groups of community members together. I saw the clear difference between the two companies was Millennial was bringing together a small group and then reaching out and then coming back to the table. With Unicom, I like the fact that everybody's at the table, everyone's having those conversations in the room about the issues that confront us today, and then being able to reach out to a much larger group. They've given us samples of 200, 150 community members coming out to engage with us. That to me is very enticing to ensure that we have this fully vetted and more community members are involved in the process, because that's what we've heard. We've heard that for a long time. Make sure we hear from the community. Make sure that the community has voice in this. And when I compare the two, I see that there is a difference in their process. And that's what I'm gauging, is their process. And then I'm also looking at what have other school districts done with the companies. And Unicom is definitely, that's been their area of focus, have been school districts. And then when Erica reaches out to a couple community members, part of the Lyle, and you hear the positive response from those individuals, it's very encouraging. The prices, there are two very different prices. It is a, Unicom is looking at working with us for an entire year, basically. There is a portion within their contract that allows for a 30-day opt-out at any point. So it doesn't matter whatever stage we're in, that if we feel like this is not going the direction we want, we inform Unicom that you have 30 days and we'll be done with the contract at that time. Erica, could you just speak for just a second or two on what you heard from two community members from a different district?
Sure. Well, first, if you don't mind, I just want to share that I think that the facilities conversation provides an opportunity for us. So I've been with the district, this is, you know, now that the school year is ended, one full school year, mm-hmm. I've kind of seen the ebbs and flow, and I've met a lot of community members, some that have like-minded thoughts, others who have very different thoughts, and a lot of people in between. And I think with this opportunity to have a more of a comprehensive process for community engagement is really an opportunity. It just happens to be that the conversation is facilities. And we have this question out there, what do we do next with our facilities? And what are the needs? Mm-hmm. And this past year I've spent the year sitting with the architects, learning a lot from Jack, you know, talking about budget, and I feel like this, it took me the entire year to feel like I'm up to speed to where the rest of maybe the board members have been, or Paul and Karen and the other folks that have been sitting at the table. It took that long. There is a lot to learn, and it's not simple. And so if we want to open the door to the community to come in and do what I've been able to do this year, I think that the conversation would be a lot less frustrating for everyone. And so I think that this is just a very real opportunity, however we do it. So I just kind of want to put out there, kind of my professional recommendation is that We need deeper, more comprehensive community engagement, period. To build trust and to kind of reset how we connect with the community, however that happens. Now, the recommendation is UNICOM, and beyond the presentation, beyond, you know, we've met, you know, Paul and I and some of the cabinet members met the person who's actually going to be working with us, which is Dan Burns. Mm-hmm. He is a true community engagement professional within UNICOM. That wasn't what our presentation is, and that's my one disappointment, is that I wish that you could meet Dan, because I think that he is the reason that this has been successful at other districts. And when I cold called one of the co-chairs at Lyle, so that's get to what you asked.
That's okay.
And his name is Bill. I said, can I tell them who you are, about you? He said, sure. He's a small business owner. He owns a photography business. He has four children in the Lyle School District. He was the co-chair of the Vision 202, so it's District 202 in Lyle. And he shared with me that Dan, you know, was a wonderful partner, that he cannot tell me enough wonderful things about his experience. And they're actually right at, they're in it. And they're presenting to their board next week the kind of the findings of the task force and report. Now, I will say UNICOM uses a lot of different language than I would use. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes I think we can get caught up in the terminology, but I really believe that what they're presenting professionally is very sound, comprehensive, and it's a true process, which is what I like about it. Mm-hmm. But what Bill said to me was that, and I wrote these notes down as we were talking, and I sent them to Paul, so I'm just going to read them. I told Paul that he was very pleased with everything beginning to end. Their community engagement had a great turnout of community members throughout the process. UNICOM ARC and the community itself did a ton of work to make sure the entire community knew about the engagement and that everyone was invited to participate. Everything was made public, and UNICOM ARC was a fantastic partner. Bill really feels like all voices were heard. Nothing was edited, everything was shared, and everything was made public. He described an open and transparent process. He also specifically commented that Dan, as I mentioned, from UNICOM, does a very nice job working with the community and the co-chairs. He highly recommends UNICOM and would be happy to come and talk to our district about their process and their timeline. Then he shared with me that they have their final report to the board a week from today. And he, you know, he continued to say that he felt like, overall, the entire community felt like this had set them on the right path. Mm-hmm. So, and they're just finishing it up. So they're in it, they're feeling it. This isn't 2 years down the road. And then the other woman from Lyle, we were playing phone tag. She left me a voicemail and said, I'm so excited that you called. I want to tell you all these great things about UNICOM. And so we haven't continued that conversation, but I have reached out. So I think that the references are really strong. And so that's what gives me the confidence more than really anything else. I highly respect the Wheaton 200 Communications Director. I've been getting to know her this past year. She's been somewhat of a mentor to me as I moved from higher ed into school communications. She had some critical things to say, which we have worked on and back and forth with UNICOM and the proposal. As we've seen, it looks a little bit different than it looked before. Some pieces, you know, we learned from Wheaton. Some pieces I know professionally we needed to change, and some things just didn't feel right for District 41. But I strongly support Paul's recommendation for UNICOM ARC. I think that if we're all open to it, it will be what we make of it, mm-hmm. really more than anything else.
And that's what we heard as well at the town hall meeting. The parents do want to engage in this, and they do want to have a voice, and they want to be a part of that facilities task force, whatever that is. I think we've laid out a timeline, the types of groups, from a charge group that would have parents co-chairing this committee. And I think that's an important piece, and a piece that we've heard, that who's going to be those members of the community who are going to be leading this group. And it is through that charge team and those co-chairs. I think that's an important piece. And you'll have that community task force, which would be also included in with the charge team. So you have a large group of people having these conversations, and then that group's reaching out to the broader community to have a more engaging conversation on these topics. So we feel like it's everything that Erica said, It's a quality process. It's a good process, and a process that I believe the community has been asking for. It also comes with strong recommendations from others who've been down this road and done that work, and that's important to me. So with that, I will stop and hand it over to the board.
Okay, comments, questions. And Erica, we can reach out to you, too, with any questions as well.
Are we going to have a motion?
Sorry.
I just wanted to let you know the clarity.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was not reading my notes. Yes. So, may I have a motion? Let me read the motion. In February 2015, the Board of Education directed the administration to obtain feedback from the community on the future of a facilities recommendation through a facilities community task force. This task force will study school facility needs and present a report to the board. On May 11, 2015, and May 26, 2015, the board heard presentations from two different external facilitator options on the services they could provide. Each company met with district administrative cabinet team, and following their presentation to the board, they submitted proposals. After a full review of both consultant companies and the board's previous discussions, the administration's recommendations is to partner with Uniqlo ARC. The cost of the project is $41,250 for professional fees paid from the 2014-15 budget and no more than $8,750 for travel or miscellaneous program costs as needed paid from the 2015-16 budget. The contract can be terminated by the district without cause with 30 days notice prior with all unused prepaid professional fees reimbursed. I have a motion to accept the administration's recommendation to partner with Unicom ARC for a 12-month engagement project for a total cost of $50,000.
Motion.
Second. Discussion.
I guess I'll start and just say that I don't know that this is something that we should be voting on tonight, because there was one piece of it that the board directed Dr. Gordon at the last meeting to look into, which was a community member facilitating the task force. And we've never had an update other than that or have a discussion about that. So I feel that's still something that hasn't been explored until it has been. I don't know that we should be taking a vote on this.
And that's what I went back to, of saying I didn't hear that direction from the board. So if that was my fault, I apologize, but I didn't hear the board saying to me, go forth in search for a... I heard two board members say that to me, but I did not hear a consensus. So if I misunderstood that, I do apologize, and I would be more than happy to go out if that's the consensus of the board for me to do that.
Well, I know we had discussion based on that, that we then discussed as a board whether or not we felt it was viable. I remember myself at least saying that, you know, based on the needs of this community and certainly part of the intention of this task force, which is to do what Erica Crabiel just talked about, which is an opportunity to bring community members together to, you know, to reset, create greater trust around process. I don't think an internal facilitator is appropriate, although, you know, gracious comment by a community member to have you do it, Erica, but you have a full-time job, and this right here is a full-time job. So I did not hear consensus. Other voices on this?
Well, yeah, I guess maybe we didn't. I thought there was. I didn't hear anybody say they didn't, but so...
Well, we need to give directions.
No, I understand. And I think it's ironic. I mean, the task force, the people that were at that May meeting, were some of the people asking for, I mean, people that were willing to sit on the task force were people that were asking for someone from the community, not necessarily Erica, but someone from the community to do this. So I find that interesting that the very people that, at least I've had at least four people come to me on that have asked me about taking someone from the community and doing this, and they're people willing to serve on the task force. So I think we have to consider that as something important to them. And then I know, Erica, you just mentioned the word trust, and one of the pieces for me was, I think, you know, at least it was asked by community members, at least one or two, about their participation. And I know, you know, the representative from Unicom was here, and I think he was going to get back to us. I mean, he vaguely kind of said we did a survey, But we haven't gotten anything back on that part of it yet.
Do you want me to address that?
In one second.
Okay, sorry.
I apologize for my train of thought. But so that'll be good. At least we'll get that addressed, that part of it. But if we're talking about trust, I mean, if we can find, we have some really smart people in our community. It's just my belief that, that builds trust because they're truly from our community. They're not just a company we're paying $50,000 and then trying to say we have a couple of people from the community willing to kind of run this. These are people, it's kind of grassroots for me. And when I looked at our introduction piece in here, I looked at the bullet points, and the first part is kind of creating these task force, and I got, a little bit confused by it all. It was a little too deep for me, but, we got this force and that task force and these people here and there. But when I got down to really the workshops and the public opinion survey, I looked at a broad-based citizen participation with representative organization members from every segment of the community. We're going to be the ones that are going to be asking people and kind of saying, hey, we'd like you to be on the community. Now, I don't mean necessarily, but as a community, we're going to be asking people as a whole to do this. And so if we can't garner people to want to be excited to sit on it, I don't know how they're going to be able to do it. They're from somebody from elsewhere. So I think a lot of these things we can do internally with somebody maybe from the community. We can find someone that's willing to do that. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. It saves us $50,000 and actually builds trust, I think. So.
Do you want to clear up?
Oh, the 2007? So 2007, as we said that evening, the only thing Unicom has done with District 41 is that 2000 referendum and the
2007.
What did I say?
2007.
Sorry. 2000.
He was kind of talking about that date. That's probably why you had that.
Yeah. So that referendum, the only work they did for it was the phone calling to say, where's the community interest on that? So they pulled in a company to survey over, I think it was roughly 400 people, and then they wrote up a report to the board and the administration that said whatever it said to the board at the time. That was their only participation. Their report was not to go forward.
Oh, they got that one, right?
Yeah.
And they said unequivocally, it was pretty strong language within it, said do not go forward for this referendum. I didn't see that cost within it. Mm-hmm. But that was their participation with us.
Okay. So I'd like to make two comments on this. Mm-hmm. I think that you and Erica did what we asked. You went back and you looked at these, and I believe that you absolutely do feel that this is the right group to go forward with. But I agree with Kurt. And I don't think this is a good time to do this. I went to those same meetings that Kurt went to. I heard the same things that he heard. And I believe that we're in a situation where spending that would taint the pool right off the bat of who we're going to try to pull into this committee. And I don't want to do that because, and I'll say it again, this is not a committee, I don't believe, about a referendum. This is a committee about trying to decide, is there a way to solve these problems, and do we have any kind of consensus in this community on maybe a way to do that and to engage with people in that process. So I think that Kurt's observations that meeting are the same as my observations that meeting, and based on that climate, even though I think you guys have done a really good job and brought forth a good candidate, I don't think it's the right time for the community.
So then am I hearing consensus to go have Eric and I to reach out to community members to engage in a conversation about leading the task force? Is that your charge to make? We would table this motion until I can come back to you with a person or two that would lead it. Is that what I'm hearing?
Do you have a question, Erica?
No.
I think we just need to get clarity. I think we've got to get clarity. I've heard three board members tell me.
So are we saying that, let me try to dissect this a little bit. Do you agree that the work in this document outlines correctly the work that needs to be done with the community?
Yes.
I'm asking Kurt and Stephanie.
Oh, I apologize. I thought that was an open question. I was answering. Felt like the front row student.
Remember all of us.
Well, I guess you too, Dean, since you're not comfortable working with, since your comment. Do you feel that the steps that Unicom has here that they'll do to produce a memorandum of understanding to this board on facilities, all of these steps need to occur?
Here's what I'd say, and
it's a simple yes or no.
No, you're asking me a question. I'm going to give you an answer. You may not like how I give it to you, but I'm going to give it to you because you asked me the question. So it's not
as possible.
Go ahead.
Anyways, I mean, ironically, Dean and I agree on this, so it's progress. But
I'm very happy about how you've come along.
That's a good thing. But I do believe, I mean, Dean, he did state it well, that you do $50,000 and you've tainted this whole thing right off the bat. It's you're done. You're done in the water. You just write me a check. I'll take $50,000. It's just done in the water, and I'm obviously kidding around about that. But you're going to be.
But the question is that all the work that's in this statement of document of facilities task force getting people together that
you don't need all the you don't need all the first part of it. I can't even pronounce some of the words. The facilitating charge team.
Okay, let's just say stuff. But 60% of the document is correct, and the work that's in it. Are we going to pay a community member to do the 60% of the work that needs to be done in this document, or are they going to do it for free?
I don't agree that all the work in this document needs to be done. The one thing, when I was reading it about the task forces, I'm thinking about it, you know, the whole issue of a full-day kindergarten, and I know we're trying to address multiple issues. That's not the only issue.
Right.
Facilities conversation, but part of that is full-day kindergarten, and I feel like that's kind of become, well, the community will decide if we're going to move forward with full-day kindergarten. And I think we need to be a little bit more, maybe the board needs to give a little bit more direction on that as far as, are we willing to say that we want full-day kindergarten and we're willing to go to an education referendum to provide it? Or are we saying we need to prioritize what we're doing within our schools to provide it? I just feel like those are questions that still need to be answered. And we've had task forces that have evaluated what's going on in our schools and the direction of our district, Team 21 and CIT, for example, which we just had an update from. And I feel like they've already evaluated a lot of the things. And the things that we're looking at, the first group, the charge group, I feel like the work that those teams have done, really, doesn't that already kind of encompass what you're asking this new team to do? So I don't think there's as much work as what's outlined by Unicom to be done needs done. I think the district needs to decide what we want to do, and there's not that many options for facilities. We all know that, and I guess my concern is you build a school or you don't build a school. There's only really four options. There's two options for building a school, one for additions, and then one you do absolutely nothing. And there's not a lot of gray area in the middle. You can't really meet in the middle and say we're only going to build half a school because it will cost less. And I know there's community members that support building a school, and there's ones that don't support building a school. And I don't know if you're going to get a task force together, and are we going to try to convince each other why one side is right or one side is wrong? And do we think if you present the facts, it will change people's opinions? I just don't know that that's going to happen. I think a better approach might be to get all the information together that we need to make a decision, hold information sessions to educate the community, provide information on our website, mail out information, and then actually conduct a survey to see what people think about some of these things. And then maybe you have a task force try to come up with a solution once they know what the overarching community thinks. Because my fear is you're going to get a task force of people. I was at the meeting. It's going to be a lot of the people that come to these meetings, but we're not going to necessarily get people engaged that haven't been there, but we will get people that will show up to support or not support the direction we want to move. And I just think there's a simpler way to go about it, because there's not that many options.
And I'm afraid with the direction that we're going with this report, I feel like we're doing it so we don't have to be accountable for a bad decision, whereas I feel like we need to kind of give some direction and
I disagree. I see it as you're absolutely right. There's been forums and there's been groups from 2010 to 2015 looking at this stuff, and I think this is the, I don't want to say the last Hail Mary, but this is the, okay, this board, previous boards, and previous board before that tried to solve this facility conversation, and it's always felt, from the readings that I've had, that it's always been prejudiced to what the board wanted, that board wanted at that time. And by using a third party, and this is, my thoughts are, this third party, it works with the community, and literally the community comes with a recommendation, and all the board is doing is putting legal language on it and making a vote if we're going to go one way or another. And one of the options is do nothing. One of the options is do nothing. But not having any type, not having any, but not having a majority or plurality effort from the board, and have this led by a third party engaging that community as a board, we say this was not prejudiced by the seven people that are up here at all. This was to the seven people that went to the community meetings or the 70 people that went to the community meetings. And I'm hoping that how this lands, if we can say done and dusted for the next 5 years, because if the option is the community just says, nope, we just don't want to do this. We can't see it. We don't want taxes to rise again. We don't want a referendum. We think it's good. Full day kindergarten isn't where we want to go. Churchill's fine, or whatever it is, and just do nothing. You're right. It could have a perception that the board is giving up some of their responsibility, but I think it's, we've taken it to a step that says now we need the community buy-in 100%, or any option is going to fail. Even a no option is going to fail. So that was my reasoning. If all this work has got to be done, 60% of this work is going to be done, and if unless somebody's going to do it for free, we're going to have to put money out there anyways.
Other comments, John?
Dean, did you want to answer the question before I go, or no?
Well, he had asked if I thought all those steps need to be done, and I think that there's a very good chance that all those steps need to be done. I don't think we're ready to take those steps yet. Okay. I want to go back to when the three of us were in our board orientation meeting a couple of years ago, and we said, here's what we need to do. We need to engage a lot more with the community. And I think you're doing that, and I certainly know you're doing that too since you've been here. I think that these are school board issues, and they take longer. And I think that we have more work to do. I think we have to spend more time with the community, get more voices in the community. I referenced the last time, I think it's in the minutes, what the League of Women Voters did. I was very impressed with that. I think there's other groups out there that can do that too. And eventually, for something like this, and this is my opinion, I think for something like this to happen, it isn't going to be us asking the community for it. It's going to be the community demanding that we do something. And I think that's the way that this is going to work in Glenelg.
Okay. So?
I'm going to disagree with everybody and agree with everybody.
This is so interesting.
I do think there's
one. The tape on, right?
Good at that.
Remember? Remember
to listen carefully.
Remember to speak up so that it's heard.
Yeah, Kurt, keep your paper up. Well, first of all, I like the fact that there's that fourth option out there doing nothing, because I've been saying that's a clear one.
Patrick
and Stephanie from that. But I do think there's more than four. And so there clearly are. So there's everywhere in between. For instance, an obvious one to me, and I'm simpler than Kurt, just fix Hadley. Just that. That's all we want. We don't want full day care. We don't just fix Hadley. It's so broken, go fix it. I'm not saying it's that way, but that's what you could hear. At times it may seem like that when you're hearing about flooding and this and the safety program or PBL I went to, where there's all these issues in the stairwells and all that. I see that here anymore, but that was a PBL that was done. But here's the thing. For me, I don't think, I'm going to answer your question. I don't think 100% of this needs to be done. I've been wrestling with this, pun intended, so that, and I've talked to Paul about it. First of all, I thought the presentation, I'm just going to say it for the record, was poor. Okay, I thought that was a poor presentation.
From Unicom.
From Unicom, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, he just...
from Unicom back, whatever, 4 weeks ago, whatever it was. Dan Byrne, certainly, I'm glad to hear the references as solid as what I was expecting, but for me, hiring consultants, there was a disconnect. But I'm willing, you guys, you're getting references and all that, at some level, I'm willing to get over the hump. But then when I read this, I don't think 100% of this is needed. I do think community engagement needs to be enhanced, Dean, yes. We said that communication was poor. I'm glad you're here, Erica. It's been improved. It needs to continue to be improved. Paul's doing a great job. Town Hall's the whole nine yards. I don't think there's a community member who can pull this off. And what I am afraid of, and maybe I'm wrong, you guys, six people can tell me I'm wrong, and that's fine, is that you get down the road with this person that's just, and I agree with Kurt, I'm done. I'm agreeing with this right now. There are a lot of great people and people who could do this charge in our community, and that's one reason we have a great community, is there are all these people, and there's tons of people who volunteer in this community. That's the other great thing. But this task is huge, and there could be pressures from all over the place that person gets, and by golly, I'd hate to be there 50% through or 60% through, and that person just says, you know what? I don't have the time because I just got a job transfer. I don't have the time because politically it's a rough situation. And when you hire somebody, you're hiring them to start and complete the job. Sometimes you get what you pay for. When you don't pay somebody anything for something, the worst thing you want is free advice from an attorney. Because what happens is you don't get the best advice from not paying for it. So I have an issue with that. The other thing is I think there will be an undue burden put on our staff if we do have that community member, because you are the paid individual, staff is, and I would see I could see that person relying on them a little heavier than if we were paying a third party. So that's kind of the broad scope. This, I do think it's worth the $50,000. Kurt, I agree with you, it's too much. Dean, right now, based on both of you guys agreeing, I wasn't at that session, I'll just jump in the water with you and say, I'm with you. I think this thing could be revamped with them or with somebody else, another firm, to condense it. The timeline's too long in here for me. I think some of the stuff we said this, I agree with it. We've done this already. I mean, some of this has come out. Team 21, recommending full-day kindergarten. We've gone through all of what we have said and said, there's overcrowding at our schools. We talked about it ad nauseum today about cubbies maybe jetting out and causing more crowding, boxes being in an inappropriate spot for teachers. So obviously we have what we consider our term that we use, took me a while to get it in our workshop, right-sizing the schools. These are issues we've already said. I think we do need a task force. We do need to reach out to the community members, and I sure hope it's more than seven. Patrick, I hope it's more than 70 and not 700, but, more than 70, that we get the feedback, what they feel is the most important. And I do believe that it won't sit there and be a bickering debate. There's going to be people on the extremes. There's going to be somebody that says, do nothing, I'm telling you why, I'm yelling from the top of the mountain, my voice is louder than yours, therefore you have to listen to me. Okay, that's great. But the goal of these task forces is to bring everybody together. You're going to lose people on the fringe. It's just life. I mean, that's what life is. We learn from them. We don't ignore them. But at the end of the day, we're going to have this core. The core that we are going to be responsible to. We're responsible for all the constituents. But at the end of the day, I would hope this task force gets a core, and a big, broad core, that we hear that have is number one, kindergarten is number eight, whatever the priorities are, and then we get to make the decision as elected officials of what we think's best. We may think their number three items the most important because they make compelling reasons why it was number three, and two and one we don't have the funds for, or we're of the opinion, more than just projecting out as Kurt and Stephanie are, that a referendum, education referendum, won't pass. Maybe there's more of us that believe that after we're educated more. Maybe Kurt comes on another side and flips his coin and somebody else flips the other way. I don't know, but mm-hmm. that process needs to happen. And I just think we have to, like Dean said, we have to take a breath, look at what we've done, and reach out and get a better proposal to get us to the next step. And I think a task force is needed.
The only thing that I would add there to that piece would be careful that everyone has the same knowledge this group has, and I would say out here. As a person at that task force or at that one meeting said, and he was pretty articulate, he's like, hey, I want to be a part of this, but I haven't been sitting here listening to all these conversations, and you're going to have a few more of those people at the table, and you're going to have to give them that background knowledge. You're going to have to spend time going back to 2001. You can't just start right off with our recommend. That's my only.
Stephanie's point is a good point, though, and I don't like to misinterpret what you're saying, so correct me if I'm wrong. But is that we've done all that. And you're right. It's in our brains. It's back at my home.
Totally agree.
You've got stacks this high, and you've educated yourself over the last 12 months. But maybe we can this summer formulate something that puts that in a user-friendly format. I think that's what more or less.
Yeah, all I was saying is careful. There's some communities who don't have that same. They're going to probably need a little bit of time trying to catch up.
And we need to do. We need
That's all.
Well, and
I was saying.
I was going to say. I mean, as we're sitting here, one of the things I thought about is, you know, and there's been names given to me. And Patrick, to your point, I mean, Glen Ellen is a volunteer community. I mean, there are people that will feel, that, you know, you did say that. I'm agreeing with you. But you know, as a guy that grew up there's a lot of volunteers. There are people that will feel compelled to lead this. But one of the things I think that you can do to help, that we can do to help Dr. Gordon, is maybe approach it as a team concept with. There are men and women in this community very bright, and if you to Joe's point, if you put, that's a lot of pressure for maybe one person to do as a volunteer, but if you bring them as a team concept, maybe two people together, two really solid leaders that we have in this community, and they work together to facilitate this, that takes some of the pressure off of it. And if one of them gets a great job in California, then you still have one of the people here, but. That may help you as you're talking to people, Dr. Gordon. That,
okay.
If you say, hey, can we pair some names up? Here, would you be willing to work with this person, the both of you? I think you may have some success with that.
I think it would need to be more than two if you did that. I don't know that two is the ideal number. I'm not sold on the volunteer concept 100%. But I like your idea of expanding it to a team. And then the only thing I can say on top of that, I just want to make sure that we realize as a board, if we go that route, that I believe that there will be much more burden placed on Paul and his staff. It's just natural because I'm the volunteer. You're the papers. I'm not saying that they have to make copies and all that, but it's just there's going to be more fun.
Yeah. Well, unless I hear some shift, it's clear that we need to table the recommendation. And what I'd like to suggest is, this in some ways is what happened last year. We did not plan to have any July board meetings, but we ended up with a special workshop on guess what topic? Facilities. So it seems to me that what we need to do is table this recommendation tonight, and Paul and I will come up with an email to the board.
I don't want to have July meetings.
Okay.
To talk about facilities, because we're kicking the can down the road, and I'm all for let's do this right. Let's engage the community, like Dean is saying. If that's what we need to do, that's what we need to do. Mm-hmm. I'm always, let's take the next step. Let's move forward. This is the way to do it. We have a proposal in front of us. We got the ability to change the dynamics of this district with the facilities, with Churchill and Hadley. We got something in front of us. Mm-hmm.
if we decide not to go down this route, then we have to understand the consequences of the time of changing and fixing this is going to be another.
Well, that's what I was thinking, Patrick.
And I am not. I will not come to a July meeting to have another conversation because we can't have a conversation finalized when we're supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Can we table this until?
I'm okay with coming to a July
meeting.
I'm not. He's been doing this for 11 years.
Can I?
You haven't been doing it for.
Hold on. Hold on.
This board has.
Okay. Can I just say this, please? I'm tabling this. We can come back to this on the June 22nd meeting and reform some of our thoughts on this. Clearly, we've heard. I've been taking notes, so we can summarize, and Eric has been taking notes too. But it seems to me that our direction tonight is to take a roll call vote on this. We're in the middle of discussion, and I don't hear clarity in terms of where we're going. I will say this, and this is just a couple of observations in terms of people's notes. On some level, this is a little bit different, but several years ago when there was a boundary committee that was put together as a task force, in fact, they came back with a decision to not do anything. And that was a frustration. I served on that board as a board member because, in fact, boundary issues are really important in this district, and just looking at, you know, where we have, you know, larger schools than others, et cetera. But they did a lot of hard work, and, in fact, that group of really dedicated community members came back and said, it's not worth it politically. People will not move their children, et cetera, et cetera. So there's that observation in terms of the do nothing. I think the reality is the board has to do something. And I think why we're here is because, in fact, we've been having this whole conversation since Paul hired Erica and you built a communication engagement plan to say that the board needs to unequivocally hear consensus of a community on public education from a pre-K through 8 perspective. And so that's how we ended up, I think, with the task force concept. So it's a little bit, I mean, I think we're stuck. I feel like we're stuck, and that it's in some ways antithetical to this whole process we've been discussing to say, let's get as much information as possible, and now we're saying, not this way, which is fair, and that's the board to discuss. But the other piece of this, as I'm listening to folks, is I brought with me tonight, these are all the documents that the teachers gave us in October, and the all-day kindergarten proposal, and a report from 2008 that is, I think, part of the reason that we wanted to put this to a very well-formed, engaged community task force, because we don't agree on this. So from marketing perspective, once a person makes a decision, they're pretty well embedded in that decision. And no matter how much documentation you put out there, if I believe this, it's going to be hard for me to change that. So when you came to us and said, we think that using a professional group will help move the needle, because we have, this is just a piece of what we all have. That was my understanding. I don't hear consensus of the board to be able to take a vote. And so I'd like to recommend that we table it for June 22nd and then have some correspondence between Dr. Gordon and the rest
of us.
Do we
have, just so kind of go into what Kurt said, trying to get some direction.
Right.
Do I go up tomorrow and start knocking on doors and asking people, do you want to do this for us, and bringing some people together? You guys would obviously need to give me some names.
You're going to meet with a gentleman this week.
Oh, yeah.
And you could talk to him, and he'll give you plenty of
names. So, but I'm just looking for...
I don't think you can, because you don't have a definition of what that community member is going to do.
Right. I'm with Patrick on that. I think one of the issues we have here in front of us is that this proposal includes items that some of us think may be over and beyond what is necessary in the task force.
Okay.
I mean, I think what's necessary is a game plan going forward that includes a third-party task force. That's what I think. But I think that game plan is us putting together all the information that we have in our heads. You know, that Erica Tribal has educated herself on the last 12 months. And we need a tool that is put together prior to having this task force. Maybe if we do that, this proposal by Unicom or somebody else doesn't cost $50,000. Maybe it costs $22,000. And maybe that number some people can't live with. Maybe that's the ideal number to get what we need out of the task force. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's clear we have these recommendations from 2021. We have right sizing that the board says we came up with that at our workshop. We had our workshop last July. We had our list of items up mm-hmm. there, you know, and those are the things we need to community engage. Maybe the task force is the wrong thing. I don't know, but I thought it's the right thing. But for me, it's not a volunteer thing. This team thing, okay, it has some merit, but I'm still worried if the team's too small. But I think a third party independent that's paid less than $50,000 on a time frame that has it starting in August and finishing in May is ideal.
Can we ask Paul and Erica to go ahead?
Comment really quick.
Yep.
I guess in my mind, in looking at this and seeing the two presentations, and looking at the timeline from Unicom, I mean, really all of the work they're suggesting from now until next March, I feel like has already been done. I mean, I think at this point, can't we say we want full-day kindergarten? We think it's what our district needs. It's just a matter of how we're going to implement it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've come up with facility options to do that. So all of the, I don't understand all of, like October to January, the task force team, I feel like they're going to redo what's already been done. So we've made those decisions. We have options on the table. Maybe there's another option that a community member's thought of that hasn't been thought of that should be considered as well. But really, at this point, there's two pieces that you need. You need the history, as Joe was talking about, the history and education, going back, putting some comprehensive information together to get community members up to speed that haven't been coming to board mm-hmm. meetings and following it. So, I mean, that's going to be, our staff's going to have to do that. I mean, you can't hire, an outside company can't put that together anyway. So we need to put the history piece together. And then you need someone to help, okay, this is what we said we want. Here's a couple options. We need to work as a group to vet this, try to figure out what the community would support. And I guess that's why, the Millennia presentation made so much more sense to me, because they were truly just coming in and as an outside party helping facilitate us to mm-hmm. this is what we think we should do given the parameters and information. Unicom, I feel like, I just don't understand this year-long process when we've already made these decisions. Decisions have already been made by the board, and it seems like we're redoing what's already been done. And
I don't know that the decisions have been made by the board, though. That's the one thing. Team 21 made a recommendation to
not the board, but the administration has recommended this is what we need in our district.
Right, okay.
It's all clarified. And we have a direction that the administration would like to go. We have some facilities options we want to explore.
Right.
And it's really just vetting that with the community and getting their input and figuring out what's going to be successful. And I just don't know that we need a year to do that. I still think we could maybe find a couple of people in town who could help facilitate it. If we can't, I think I'm just not comfortable with what Unicom has proposed to go about that. I like Millennia's approach much better. Mm-hmm. But I think those are some things we need to look into, this whole timeline, as well as someone in the community.
I think part of the difference here in terms of Erica's presentation, is, as she's talked the last couple times from her perspective, is that this engagement, and use the term opportunity tonight, is about something bigger than only determining, as large as that is, that facilities discussion, but that it's and this resonated with me, but you use the term reset, and part of the potential collateral benefit of the task force, and we can still, again, we can redetermine what that will be, and it sounds like the board is, that's some of the direction that we're giving to Paul, is that this task force comes together and builds a sense of cohesion around what is it that we're trying to accomplish as a district, and then and rebuilding or resetting some of that trust in the conversation with the district.
But is there
and,
trust around everything or around the facility?
Well, I think that word is about everything. Anything this district does is all about that. So even, you know, recognizing that there are some really great leaders out there, and you know, like Kurt, I actually have someone in mind that he's brought up before. There is that sense of having to give them direction. So I don't think we have the ability to say to you, go start knocking on doors. I think the next step is to table this until the 22nd, and perhaps the direction is to take some of what Stephanie said and the rest of us around developing a next step. It sounds to me like we're saying, as much as this community engagement is about building and achieving a larger set of goals, that the board is saying this is a more finite project, and we need to take a look at what that might be.
The only thing that concerns me is I do think if we come back in a couple of weeks and we discuss some of these things and we give some clearer directions and bit, and then Dr. Gordon goes off and let's say we can't find it. You know, now I'd almost like to, you know, the salesman in me says maybe we could get Dr. Gordon to get some feelers out to see if we would have some interest, if somebody would say, hey, you know, I'd be willing to look at this. Mm-hmm. Once the board decides, like you said, mm-hmm. you know, some parameters, I'd be willing to take a look at this. I think over the next couple of weeks, I think it probably is important that you reach out, and at least because we'll know. I mean, then you might come back and say, you know what, guys, I talked to the 7 people that you
recommended,
and nobody really has any interest. Well, then we know that we're back to Millennia or wherever we're at, but then at least we're not, you know. So I think we should
Can I have one thing? Simultaneously, can we go back to Unicom? Because, I mean, I said this before, but I just feel like this is too much, and we're paying for stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe we need it, and I'm missing it.
Well, I think this is the point about, this is their philosophy. This is their program. I mean, you had that discussion. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you had that discussion.
We've had the conversation, but I think as I started the meeting on this topic, really feel like the last time we had this conversation, we weren't focused in on these two pieces, and I did feel like we missed some of this conversation and discussion and for that direction, because I really didn't feel like as I walked out of here that I was supposed to go look for community members. So I appreciate this more turning into the discussion. Mm-hmm. So give me that feedback. What I'm hearing is cost, control cost a little bit, timeline, and at that same time, while still engaging an outside facilitator, sounds like as well as going out and searching for a few people, a team to come in as volunteers to facilitate it. So I'm hearing dual, but that's what I'm hearing right now.
And I'd like to clarify something too, and that is that I started by saying I thought you did a good job with Unicom ARC. I'm not opposed to Unicom ARC.
Yeah, I didn't hear that.
Well, no, a couple of people said that, you know, go back to Millennium. Mm-hmm. I'm going to trust that when you went back to Unicom ARC, you did a good job with them. You both were pretty excited about it. You both did a lot of deep dive into it. They're not the problem. So if that comes back as the solution, that doesn't mean I won't be able to support that if that's what comes back. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is, from a community point of view, I feel there's steps we need to do before that, and maybe not have to go to anybody.
Okay.
Or maybe go to something.
I mean, just clarification on what you said here. So Unicom, this is their program, and they run with one machine? I mean, or they don't...
Well, I think what we've
had conversations with them about is they are flexible. They're willing to work with us to define our goal, our task, and the outcomes for that community task force. Believe it, I thought I had communicated that to them from when I heard the board, but tonight I'm hearing better clarity from the board members as to exactly what you want. So I keep hearing, I'm hearing two things, that we're going to bring back a condensed outside facilitator proposal and searching for a volunteer group to bring back to the board. That's kind of where, that's what I'm hearing right now. So we would table that, this, because still believe Unicom's a high quality organization who's done successful work in many, many different districts. So I think that's what I'm hearing.
Is that accurate?
Is that consensus?
Is there a consensus on that? Does that make sense, Kurt, with that? Joe? Drew?
Okay. So that's... I will write this up tomorrow, though, and then send this out. Because,
quite honestly,
we are running out of time.
Yeah.
So we have to motion to table it.
So I...
We have to motion to table.
Yes, I know.
I
just want to
motion to table.
Hold on a second. Drew, go ahead.
My quick question is, when the Blue Ribbon Committee was formed,
that was 2000. Yeah.
That was in 2000. Would that? Did they have an outside facilitator for that?
I'd have to go back and look.
I don't know.
The problem,
which was kind of addressed in here with Blue Ribbons, was it was hand selected by the administration and therefore untrusted.
Right.
So that was the problem with it.
But
because you couldn't. They didn't let me on, and I wanted to be on, but.
You're throwing a softball to people there.
Not true.
They did select who they were selecting. And if you stopped and knocked on the door here and said, I'd like to be on it, they'd tell you no. So that created a lot of problems.
Okay.
But in the 2008 that John Kenwood served on as the board rep, that was an all call, as Erica's described it. You know, people wrote in, they... as well as our vision statement as well, the 2007 visioning that we did. That was an all call. Whoever showed up at the boathouse and could commit to those 3 nights in the summer, you know, did it. So and it's a fair question. And I think that's why the direction of trying to say, let's make this as dispassionate as possible in terms of engagement with people who are connected to the district, because that's always an issue. So if that's an understanding, and Paul has the right understanding, then he'll put notes together and then send any feedback back to him in terms of clarification ASAP.
So we need a motion on the table.
Motion to table the community engagement recommendation as proposed.
Make a motion. Second.
Okay. Discussion. Roll call.
Mr. Clark.
Yes.
Mr. Aldrin.
Yes.
Mr. Buckle.
Yes.
Mr. Aldrin.
Yes.
Mr. Escalante.
No.
Mr. Rochinski.
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson.
Yes.
And the sincere apologies. I truly did not think it would be 10:30 that you would be doing the FQC construction update.
There's the update.
That thing.
We're the budget on schedule.
It's done. Kids are in there. They're loving the schools. Good night, everybody.
I don't think you read it.
Yeah.
From my standpoint, but I'll have one question for you. How much premium time did we use doing for the odor reasons? And it's okay.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head, but I'll give you the answer.
It was modest. Okay, that's the level.
You're speaking with regard to Churchill?
Churchill, yeah, you wrote it in your update.
Yeah, it was
modest.
We
need that. Okay. And then, Bob, ultimately, we have our district soft cost number. I've asked this before, written near the end. We're at a budget number of $1,796,436. And I want to know, we're getting close to the end of these projects. So maybe for the 22nd, you can show us where we're at the finance committee on that number. Because then I get a better understanding of the total cost, actual savings, as opposed to just the what we call the hard cost savings, which you do a good job detailing in the top of the chart that you gave us.
Yep.
The bottom is still budget numbers. So that's all I'm talking about.
Hard and soft.
Give us the definition now.
All right.
Later.
All right.
Thanks,
Jack. Anything else?
No. I am. Even more.
Thank you.
Sorry that you had to wait that long.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It actually was very helpful to hear that whole conversation. And as somebody who's been sitting kind of in the cheap seats listening to it, I heard a lot more clarity tonight than I've heard in a long time.
Thank you, Jack. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good.
Good. I'm sorry.
All right. 2015-16 Staff Culture and Climate Survey.
So tonight, Lori will give you a brief presentation on Culture and Climate Survey that we're, well, update. That we are engaging with HumanX to have a annual Culture Climate Survey that will be delivered in the fall each year. When I say fall, it'd be at that mid to late September time frame on an annual basis. Okay. With that lead in, Lori.
And I gave
you did.
We use them for probably the last 9 years on the collection. They do an interview protocol called Venture Selections that we use to help identify child centers and teaching candidates. But they also have a product called InsightX, which is designed just specifically for school climate and culture surveys. It's a forced choice assessment, 74 questions, or measures 15 dimensions of organizational culture and health. And so the dimensions that it measures are communication, continuous improvement, quality, talent, fit, relationships, training, professional development, recognition, an ability to engage and inspire, support, and performance plan. So as we were looking at different surveys, trying to figure out what made the most sense, we knew we needed to kind of get an objective standpoint on what's happening. We wanted to make sure that it was something we could do on an annual basis. We reached out to this company, to another company, and this is the one that we liked the best. We didn't hear back from the second one. We didn't get some information from them online, but didn't see anything else that was helpful to us. And Paul, you had experience with the other culture climate survey. So we plan to implement it in October. We'll set some time either at a staff meeting or an institute day for a staff completion survey, 5-day turnaround time, which is great. And then after that, the company will come out and train our leaders about how to recover it and how to work with staff with the results. And then our intent in our conversation with principals is that then it would become a goal that the building leadership team to establish an annual culture and climate goal based on these data, this data point. We did reach out to several local school districts that use the survey and have been very, very happy with it. District 54 in Schaumburg has used it for 5 years. They actually use it twice a year. They're the only book of business that does it twice a year. Deerfield 109, I spoke with the superintendent there. They used it for 5 years also. I've been very happy with it. And I also spoke with the assistant superintendent for human resources in Bloomington, Illinois. They also used it and have been extremely happy with it. So we're looking forward to getting started.
Board, any questions for Lori or I? Nope.
Gotcha, this is information.
I
think the turnaround time is great. It's 5 days. That's wonderful.
It was one of the reasons that we really connected with them. The quality, the information, the feedback.
Lori, could this also have implications? I like the fact that there'll be a goal with the building leadership teams, but could it have some implications for a professional development team as well in terms of obviously outcomes on training, professional development? There's going to be data that you can pull directly from there. Yeah, that's good.
Well, we connect with the building leadership teams every year in terms of primary professional development.
Yeah. I can put in a plug. I work for a company that is just rated the number one company to work for in the state of Massachusetts with the Boston Globe. And we use these things, and we've gotten a lot of great feedback from them. And because of that, we also set some records with participation, which is going to be really important. We want to make sure that we get everybody to participate, so we drive for that. And I think these things come out with great results and really actionable data.
I plan to dedicate the time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is this something that you're just bringing us for informational purposes, and then you're going to come back and ask us for a vote, or...?
No, there will be. This is information only. There is no vote on this. This is.
Okay.
We'll let you know. We'll bring back to you. Right before we implement it, and then we'll give you some updates along the way.
Is it okay if I ask what this costs?
Absolutely.
The first year is $6,000. After that, it's $4,000.
Okay, so we're gonna.
And the $6,000 is with the training of the administrators and how to interpret.
And that's within Lori's HR budget.
So the intent is that we're going to use it the use it every year going forward.
Right. Okay. We made a 3-year commitment and got it.
Okay. And you've checked their references and you're comfortable that these are the people you want.
Yes, we've worked with the company for years, and then I did reach out.
Peter, I called you.
Yeah. Thanks for that other feedback on other.
Thank you, Lori. I apologize.
No, I think it's great that we're doing the survey. Definitely much needed within the district, and I know I mentioned this to you, Paul, and to discuss. Maybe at the next meeting, I know. Just a plan and timeline for moving forward with surveys in general. The mm-hmm. survey mm-hmm. is a kind of a follow-up survey of parents and teachers.
We'll have that on.
Total brain blockage of who did the last.
Mm-hmm.
And you, school perception. And you had talked about, Stephanie, also a general community survey,
general community
right?
Survey.
So there were those three pieces.
I think that's the discussion we need to have as far as timelines.
I think, were you going to bring that to us on the 22nd under the...
Yes, I have some of that for some of my goal. Yep. So we'll be addressing that tonight and then in 2 weeks as well.
Okay.
You still have a long night ahead of you.
All right. Thank you, Lynn.
Thanks, Lori.
Okay, board reports. Any quick board reports from anybody?
I'll start quickly. I went to the PTA meetings on June 3rd. They're voting for their new officers. They're co-presidents again, Melissa Power and Lisa Newhope. They have vice presidents Elizabeth Purcell, Secretary Dana Taylor, Treasurer Natalie Yeager. They also announced and had a vote on their, not there, but the results of the votes of the volunteers of the year, both very deserving, Sandy Hansen and Sue Ross.
Okay.
So that was in general. It was their last meeting of the year and all that good stuff.
Good.
And, it's obviously my home school. Finance committee tonight, you guys already know all this good stuff because we talked about all this discussion. So the paper, the Churchill Bivert reports, and the Abraham Cubbies, Lincoln Cubbies. We did also have a discussion on supplemental pay, which we talked about, and also, Bob gave us an update on the budget that he'll be presenting on the 22nd, just giving us where he's at, how it's proceeding. The goal is to get it as quickly as possible. Thursday is the goal, hopefully sooner, mm-hmm. Before the meeting on the 22nd.
To the board.
To the board.
For got discussion it. On the okay. 22nd.
Great, thank you.
Okay.
Anything else? Just a couple of reminders, reminders. We still have, as part of our board engagement, the coffee and conversations that we had started. And so I guess I'm looking for some direction. Should we restart those in August, right after we start our board meetings? And in that case, any interest in people who would do that? We've had two board members seat. We've been using Glen Oak. That's been a nice venue for that. So if you're interested, why don't you send me an email, and then I can see how many people want to do it, and we can get on kind of a rotation and still continue to use that as a point of contact with the community. Secondly, I sent to Nancy today, and she cleared with Paul's schedule president meetings through July 7th, knowing that we'll have some vacations. I'm going to have one correction to that, Nancy, so before we send that email out, she'll send all those to you guys, and then whomever wants to sit in, individual persons, go ahead and send an email, and we'll try and even those out if we have several people who want to do that. And give me whatever dates you can make, and then we can even that out for everybody to attend. And we're still using a 9/15, 7/15 model, so we can accommodate people's schedules. I'm sorry, Joe, you were busy for Hadley graduation.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. Just a wonderful job. Mr. Dively does a great job since he started last year of really personalizing graduation every year, and did so this year again with two Hadley retirees, Dr. Lynn Bruno and Mr. Tom Lofgren, who also made comment to the students, Tom Lofgren did, and that was great. I also just want to get on record the three student speakers, Delaney McClassic, Natalie Ball, and then Brennan Doherty. I asked Steve for copies of Brennan's presentation. I just thought he did a really nice job and talked really quite eloquently about that shift to high school and the preparation in Hadley and you know, the things that they need to look forward to. So I just thought that the kids did a great job, and it was a really nice night, and we got out in an hour, amazingly.
We could learn
that. Can I just piggyback on your comments on the graduation? And,
yeah.
And you know, what Erica did not mention is that she did the board address.
Yes, she did.
Did an outstanding job.
Oh, thank
so
you.
Yes, kudos to you.
Thank you. It was 3.4 minutes long, which was the best news Steve heard all day that day. Any other board reports? Just a reminder, Nancy will make sure that while we're out in July that we're getting our update on our committee responsibilities, as well as when we start right at in August, September with our other PTA stuff. So we'll make sure you guys have that. That's it. Upcoming meetings. June 22nd, 2015, we have a regular board meeting back here at the Central Services office at 7:30. We are off for regular board business meetings the month of July. We will continue president meetings all but 1 week when Paul is on vacation. And then we'll regroup again on August 10th, 2015. We have a public hearing that night. If you want to make a note for your calendars, that's on the budget, and that's at 7:15 here at Central Services Office. So 7:15, public hearing on the budget, 2015-16 budget, and then regular board meeting at 7:30 or as soon as that concludes. Other matters? Any other matters for the board? Yeah, Stephanie.
I have one, actually. Kind of exciting news, I think. I have a community member and a personal friend that contacted me, and they work for Access Communications, who is like a leader in cameras and security cameras, but they're also cameras that are used for web streaming. And he said that their company is willing to donate one to District 41 to be using for broadcasting our meetings. I didn't know, he gave me some information, but really I just wanted to bring it forward and see if it would be okay if he could work with Mike he wanted to kind of measure the room and see what kind of camera they need, give us the information, talk with Mike to find out what we might need and see if it would even be possible. If everyone's okay with that, I can put him in touch with Mike and we can see if it's an option. I guess I saw his wife today in the pool and she told me that, you know, it's kind of like, West uses on COD, so I guess they're like the leader in the industry in this.
Okay. Well, it's certainly worth taking a look at. Yeah. So thank you for that.
So, have him reach out and we'll connect him with Mike.
Oh, and I have one other question for Mike while I'm talking.
Okay.
Someone sent me a message during the meeting saying they couldn't get onto the live stream. So I don't know. I don't know what happened. I can tell you the link that I gave them. Maybe I gave them the wrong link. They couldn't find the link on the website.
Are they monitoring all night streaming?
No, but I didn't know. Is there a limit to the number of people that can get on?
No.
Damn, I must have the link wrong. Can we maybe put the link in our the board email?
The board.
Say there's a board meeting, like here's the link. Because I couldn't find the link either. So I must have a bad link.
Okay. So. That sounds good. We'll do that. We'll connect you. We'll connect him with Mike.
Okay.
Thank you.
Last thing really quickly, I know this seems really early, but we're coming up on decisions about attending the III conference, and if you have any interest in a pre-conference workshop, let Nancy know. I have the president one that's a full day that Friday, so I cross that off for work, and I'll be attending that, so Nancy, I'll give you that. But again, please take a look at that. I know it seems early, but there might be something that you want to take advantage of, and the sooner we get in, then the better the rates are. So I know we'll be asking through your board update who wants to attend, et cetera. All right. Thank you. The board has determined it has a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity and litigation. When an action against, affecting, or on behalf of the particular district has been filed and is pending before a court or administrative tribunal, or when the district finds that an action is probable or imminent, in which case the basis for the finding shall be recorded and entered into the closed session minutes, may have a motion to adjourn to closed session.
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Boczynski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Thank you. We will not be taking any action following closed session. Thank you for staying.